Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Drink up, me hearties, yo-ho!
Today is August 24th, 2013, and this is episode 35. Disney?
Disney!
Disney!
Well, here we are again, my friends, and as you must have surmised, we are here to talk about Disney games today. This is, of course, a show that First Mate Slagkick has been trying to find an angle on that I would find agreeable for, what, this is episode 35, so for the last 34 episodes he's been trying to convince me to do this.
Oh, you know you couldn't resist the magic.
Yeah, well, you know, we're sort of in the middle of a resurgence on Disney games, between Fantasia, Castle of Illusion HD, DuckTales HD just came out, Disney Infinity just came out. I'm sorry, do that again. This was with regard to DuckTales?
Yes.
DuckTales? Brilliant. It really does seem quite like high time to look sort of back and, you know, forward at this stable of should-be shovelware that is, to me, surprisingly well-regarded even today.
So I actually have a challenge to issue to you.
Oh?
Since this is a Disney-themed episode, and normally our episodes are not very family-friendly in terms of the language, I propose that we try to keep this squeaky clean, simple and clean even.
Oh, gosh. This is probably going to be a big problem for me, but... I guess if I have not broken the adult content barrier yet, I will do my best not to do so moving forward.
Delightful.
Excellent. Before we get to sort of the meat and potatoes, we have a pretty full slate of our usual follow-ups and news bits, along with an extra helping of Gamescom 2013 news. So in the interest of your time and ours, let's get this party started. If you'd like to start us off.
I would, and this is rather silly. As we've been talking about, you know, the Xbox One has been doing an Xbox 180 on pretty much everything, and now we are finding out that the Kinect will not be required for most functions.
Say what?
Yeah, I mean, for games such as Fantasia Music Evolved, coming out next year and based on a Disney property... you'll obviously need that peripheral, but while they're still encouraging, you know, the full Xbox One experience with the new Kinect, it will not be required and it will not be spying on you while you're sleeping and having magical dreams.
Is that what the kids call it these days?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, to me, the interesting thing about this is, you know, the whole Xbox 180 hashtag has been much ballyhooed since... You know, Microsoft began reversing trend on everything that they had, you know, said they were going to do with the Xbox One. To me, this is sort of the last vestige of that stated vision. This really makes me question, now that this step has been taken, I feel like, if not at launch, certainly down the line, we're probably going to see Kinectless SKUs of the Xbox One. I feel like probably any developer... who was putting a lot of effort into tools and pipeline for Kinect development. I gotta think, these guys have gotta be shaking in their boots now, because, you know, people like myself, if I don't have to use the Kinect, I'm not gonna use the Kinect. So on one hand, you know, between this, Microsoft is saying they're reaching out to indies, you know, the whole DRM issue, I kind of now I'm starting to feel like I might be on board for an Xbox One down the line when there's software I want. And that's cool, but I'm not going to use the Kinect ever. And so certainly I have to think people who are developing these games with, you know, sort of Kinect in mind, they're probably looking at people like me who are like, well, cool, people are going to buy it, but they're not going to use Kinect ever. And they're probably a little worried right now.
Yeah, that sounds problematic.
I think so. I really do. Speaking of problematic, Rock Band has updated us on their forums about another handful of, songs that they are losing licensing to. To me, most distressing, of course, is that they are losing T-Rex's Bang-A-Gong.
Yeah, that's sad news, but also kind of unfortunate is that they're pulling all of the Blood Sugar S Star Star Magic record pack from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, yeah, as well as, you know, some other more modern Red Hot Chili Peppers. And, I mean, that's fine, whatever. Also, that Loxley pack.
Oh, they were fun.
Yeah, that was fun. I'm mostly just really sad. I like Rock Band a lot, and, you know, we talked in previous weeks about how they were losing some of the licensing for these songs, and I guess there hadn't really been a song that I really loved that they had lost licensing to yet, but Bang A Gong gets me right in the feels. That's probably one of my favorite songs.
Yeah, so make sure to get that by the end of the month if you don't have it already.
Bang A Gong is coming down August 28th. All of the Red Hot Chili Peppers songs and the Loxley songs and a song by the Janitors will all be being pulled on September 30th. So if you're a Rock Band player and you don't have these songs, I'd recommend pulling them up on YouTube and making your choice fast.
Yep. So in other Xbox One news, instead of the 21 regions where 21 markets, rather, that they originally promised that the console would be launching, there's only going to be 13, which are Australia, Austria, Brazil, Canada, France, Germany, Ireland, Italy, Mexico, Spain, the United Kingdom, the United States, and New Zealand, which kind of sounds like an Epcot pavilion.
It's worth mentioning, of course, that the other 8 territories in which it was previously confirmed to launch, you know, at that time, they're still going to get the console. Like, it's going to come out there, but, you know, Belgium, Denmark, Finland, the Netherlands, Norway, Russia, Sweden, and Switzerland, they're just not on the same launch date anymore. They've been pushed back.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, this whole Xbox One launch, I'm starting to get really, like, I'm starting to feel really weird about it.
Yeah, it's not too swell, is it?
No, I don't think so. Let's see. Next up, we have news that the Guided Fate Paradox will be coming to North America in November 5th. That's awesome. This is, of course, a Nippon Ichi PS3 RPG. We've talked a little bit about it here on the show, I think, when it was announced.
Yes, it's a roguelike RPG with Disgaea-like elements, starring a high schooler who wins godly powers in a mall lottery.
Yeah, I'm absolutely here for this. Obviously, you know, I always talk about Nippon Ichi games. I kind of feel like it does what it says on the tin. You know, we're going to buy it, and we're going to talk about it here on the show once it's out.
Yeah, Nippon Ichi RPG, kind of with Doctor Who-style influences. That sounds delightful.
We also have news that there is a Rayman Legends demo for XBLA and PSN that hit earlier this week. I haven't downloaded it yet. I probably should, but I'm going to buy it on Wii U anyway, so whatever. If you don't have a Wii U, though, and you're interested in this game, I'd recommend checking out the demo. The demo for the Wii U version was really quite tremendous.
Yes. King of Fighters 13 will be hitting Steam on September 13th.
Oh, good. You may recall we talked a little bit about how news of this release had leaked months ago via the Steam database updating with references to achievements in this game. And now, for what I think is probably the first time, we're going to be having a PC release in North America of a King of Fighters game. That's awesome. I'm super excited.
That sounds really cool. Castlevania Mirror of Fate, which you probably know as a 3DS title, Lords of Shadow Mirror of Fate, is going to be getting the HD remaster as part of a Lords of Shadow pack for Xbox Live Arcade and PlayStation Network.
That pack is actually really exciting to me in particular because it will include all of the Lords of Shadow DLC. Lords of Shadow, a game I actually liked a lot. I feel like we're probably going to have to talk about that on a future episode.
Oh, yeah, you know, Castlevania games just make me think of the Haunted Mansion.
You're trying real hard there.
I'm sorry, I kind of didn't explain that quite clearly. It's going to be available separately on Xbox Live Arcade and PSN, and also is part of a collection with Lords of Shadows.
Yes, that is
correct. Lords of Shadow was not a arcade/PSN title.
Yeah. But I'm really excited for this combination pack, which was announced at the same time, because again, it includes Lords of Shadow, the HD port of the 3DS game, and the Lords of Shadow DLC, Which is like the true ending of the game in sort of a very Asura's Wrath fashion.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so very excited about that. I'm also very excited because Sonic Lost World Deadly Six Edition, this is going to be the launch release of the game, so, you know, like the first pressing, is going to come with DLC codes for bosses from the Nights into Dreams series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, really exciting to me that we're going to be getting this additional content. Especially, you know, this is a game I was planning on buying anyway. I think Sonic Lost World looks really good. And I love Knights, so this is just win-win for me.
Great. So here's some exciting news. The next Yakuza game is going to be titled Yakuza Restoration. And it's an alternate historical tale featuring Kazuma Kiryu.
And I wanna sort of butt in here because to say that it's being called Yakuza Restoration, that's not strictly true. That is how it was being reported by the press, but that implies that the game has been announced or confirmed in any context for regions other than Japan, which at this moment is incorrect. This game that was announced is Ryuga Gotoku Ishin, which obviously a lot of people think is going to be related to, you know, the Ishin Meiji Restoration era of Japanese history.
Oh, that makes sense. So
which is why people are calling it
Yakuza
Restoration.
That's their unofficial translation, then.
Yeah. I'm super excited, by the by. I'm a huge fan of that period of Japanese culture and history. Obviously, a lot of manga and anime over the years have made use of this setting for some really compelling stories. I look in the general direction of Rurouni Kenshin, but, you know, that's because I'm an American. So I'm just super stoked about this. I will definitely be looking into it, importing it if it's a PS3 game. Or Vita, as long as it's, you know, something I can import on.
Yeah, alright. So for Diablo 3 fans, we finally got some teaser trailers and a gameplay trailer for the next expansion, the first expansion for Diablo 3. And it involves...
Tell me more.
Malthael, the fallen archangel of wisdom.
Oh, gross.
And so, if you're a Diablo fan, you've probably already seen these, but...
And I'm sorry, what was that expansion called again?
That'll be called Diablo 3 Reaper of Souls.
That sounds really awesome and super, like, metal, so I'm here for that. Like, I like it dark.
Spooky. Very Disney villain.
Yeah. You know, something else really... I'm like, no, it's not. Something really notable, EA's Origin service. This is, of course, EA's independent... Well, independent as EA can be. Steam alternative to digital distribution in the PC space. Now allows for returns on first-party games that you've purchased and decide you don't want anymore.
That's pretty cool. And, you know, EA now has the license to the Disney-owned Star Wars games for the more, you know, the more hardcore sort of Star Wars games, because Disney Interactive is going to be doing the casual games. So if there's a Star Wars game in the future that you don't really care for, you'll be able to get a return for it.
Yep. You'll have 24 hours, within 24 hours of launching the game for the first time, or 7 days after purchase if you haven't run it yet. To return the game. So I guess if you can play it and beat it in 24 hours, sounds like an exploit to me.
Yeah.
We don't, and I just want to say, we don't encourage this sort of scandalous behavior here on GameBuoy. But I suspect that this is a thing that people are going to do, and it's probably worth talking about.
That sounds shameful.
I think so. I find that very undesirable. In other Castlevania Lords of Shadow news, Castlevania Lords of Shadow 2 has been confirmed for a February 25th release in North America. I am obviously talking about February 25th, 2014, because 2013, February 25th has already passed.
That's true.
Wouldn't it be funny if someone didn't know that? If there's anyone out there listening to this who didn't know that, I'm so sorry.
It would be silly. Here's some unfortunate news. Shadow of the Eternals did not reach its funding goal.
That is very sad. It actually ran out of time on Kickstarter, just before reaching the $400,000 mark. They were looking, of course, for $750,000 to make this spiritual sequel to Eternal Darkness. I don't know what the current plan for Dennis Dyack and those guys over at Precursor Games is now.
So, things aren't looking too good for Shadow of the Eternals, but gosh, let's be honest, when did they really look good at all?
I would unfortunately say that prospects never really looked super bright on that one. In other news, the Project Spark Xbox One beta has been confirmed to be arriving in January. The Windows 8 version of the same beta will be arriving in late October 2013. I bring this up because, Slackick, I feel like Project Spark was like the one Xbox One game that you were kind of interested in.
Yeah, it was one of the few that kind of seemed interesting. So, you know, but well, it's also going to be on Windows 8, so, yeah.
Windows 8, have fun with that.
It's not that bad.
Yeah, well, anytime you have to describe your OS as not that bad, you're not exactly in a winning spot. Game dev tycoon Hi-Rez hits Steam next week, August 29th. We've talked about this game previously, most notably for its rather inventive use of DRM to thwart pirates back in May. And this was actually a Steam Greenlight title that was successfully greenlit. So hooray!
Congratulations! Wark!
Thank you. Took a little longer than I expected. And last on our follow-ups for the day, we have news that three more executives have exited Zynga.
Oh.
Yeah, I have very little to add on that. Quite a few people seem to be leaving, even though, you know, stocks are still up under newly appointed CEO Don Matrix. So, you know, that sounds like doom and gloom, but at the same time, if the numbers are staying steady, it's hard to really say.
Well, you know, even large companies like Disney have had their rough patches. So, you know, Zynga could very well pull through from all of this overhaul and management change.
Yeah, yeah. You know, following news of these people leaving, stocks went down not even 1%. Like, there was a very minor dip. Like, very not interesting. Anyway. That covers our follow-ups, so it is time, everyone, for
news. 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 Oh my god, news.
Oh my god, news. The creators of the StarCraft MMO, StarCraft Universe, which you may recall not some number of years ago, but quite some time ago, had gotten Blizzard lawyers all up in a kerfuffle, sort of doing a cease and desist, back when it was called World of StarCraft, I think.
Right.
So the StarCraft Universe people, the whole StarCraft MMO concept that they're doing within the StarCraft 2,
Engine,
yes.
It's really just a mod.
It's a super in-depth, crazy complex mod. They're doing a Kickstarter. They're looking for, $80,000 with, Blizzard's permission to do like a full-fledged, like multiplayer online, release of this mod that is apparently coming together really crazy well.
I thought when it was World of StarCraft, it already looked really neat, so.
Yeah, and I'm looking at pictures of it now just like, wow, that looks really complex. This is incredible.
So I definitely plan to pledge. You know, not like, not a ton of money, but I'll pledge my $15 or whatever, you know, my normal funding.
Yeah, I support this. I want it to happen. Here's $15. And, you know, I haven't checked today, but I feel like this Kickstarter's got to be coming along pretty well, because this was announced a week or two ago. Yeah, it's already past the halfway point toward its goal, so I'm pretty confident that this is gonna make it, and I'm gonna play it. That'll be great.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds really fun.
Yeah, and you know, it's, they have some stretch goals. Currently the Protoss and Terrans are playable races. If they cross the $100,000 mark, they're gonna add the Zerg as a playable race.
That sounds really fun.
Yeah. And I think it's notable just to say, you know, Blizzard is working with these guys to sort of work out, engine bugs that they have and make sure that they can sort of achieve their vision with this mod project. And, you don't even need to own StarCraft II properly to play it. You can get the free to play, StarCraft II Starter Edition and play this once it's out.
That was a little surprising to me.
Yeah, but I think it's a big PR get for Blizzard. Like, I think people who are logging in all of this time on StarCraft II Starter Edition, next time they do a holiday sale where StarCraft II's $9.99, oh, maybe these Starter Edition people are gonna hop in and go, you know, whole hog. Since they're playing this game so much.
Yeah.
I think it's a really unique promotional opportunity for them, and I definitely think it builds a lot of goodwill for them. I'm talking about them in a positive way right now, so, you know, heck, you gotta figure other people who are more invested than I in StarCraft as a license have gotta be thrilled about this.
Yes. So, in a very serious piece of news, we've heard that Dragon Cancer, which is the story of Ryan Green, a game developer, his 4-year-old son who is fighting cancer.
Aww.
It'll be coming to Ouya in 2014. So, you know, this is a very personal, powerful story that they are telling. And so, you know, it'll be able to be played on your Ouya. So,
you know, I have to say, I have really strong feelings about some of these really, you know, what I typically call important art games. I have to say, I really appreciate, we talked previously about the Ouya folks throwing money at developers to sort of money hat exclusive titles or what have you. This is something that really strikes me as incredible, that the Ouya folks are putting money behind this game that I think is really important and communicates something really unique and special. There's another game like that I'm going to talk about later this episode. But, I'm really happy and really excited to see the Ouya folks going in the direction of sort of making sure that this really, unique, creative, and important content is getting produced and getting pushed out there to the masses.
I agree.
I mean, you know, the masses insofar as you can call the Ouya audience massive.
So, a new Humble Bundle is available, and it is a Humble Origin Bundle.
Yeah, you know, this is a big deal for a lot of reasons, you know. We've talked a little bit about attitudes about Humble Bundles and their typical association with the indie community, and there's previously been some backlash when sort of these major publishers work with the Humble Bundle folks to do, you know, sort of less indie bundles. But I have to say, really tremendous on EA's part. They forewent all proceeds in this Humble Bundle. There's no pay the developer option, which they usually do have. Your only options are, you know, to tip the Humble Bundle folks and to donate the rest to charity.
And some of these charities are Human Rights Campaign, San Francisco AIDS Foundation, along with American Red Cross, American Cancer Society, and such. But, I mean, you know, kind of speaking to their commitment to promote LGBT inclusivity in the gaming culture. And you know who else is very inclusive of LGBT individuals?
Who's that?
Disney.
Oh.
They really are.
You're doing that again. But yeah, so I'm really excited about, you know, this bundle. I'm really excited about where the money is going. I find that really compelling. Obviously, I am a fan of the Human Rights Campaign, even though I think they have some issues which are not really here. Not really here to discuss on Game Buoy, but overall, I think that that's a good charity. Like, it's certainly better than the alternative.
Yeah.
The games in this bundle, since that's obviously what all y'all out there in Radioland are interested in, we're looking at Dead Space 3, which is on Origin only, Crysis 2 Maximum, which is available for both an Origin key or a Steam key. Dead Space 1, which comes with, again, the option of an Origin key or a Steam key. Burnout Paradise Ultimate Box, which is also Origin key or Steam key. Mirror's Edge, again, also Origin and Steam. And Medal of Honor, the 2010 release, which is also available on Origin and Steam. Obviously, you know, since EA/Origin is really trying to move all of their digital distro over to Origin, I thought it was really tremendous outreach to the Humble Bundle community to offer the Steam keys in so many of these instances.
Yeah, that's surprising.
And, you know, those were just the under the average, like just four participating games. There are also a couple of, you know, beat the average games.
Yeah, which is currently under $5.
It typically is. These Humble Bundles are so great. I always try to participate in them, and there's always really great content for $5. It's really ridiculous. And $5 in this case will net you the Battlefield 3 Starter Edition on with an Origin Key, and Sims 3 Starter Pack, which is Sims 3 and I believe like the Pets expansion and one other of the first expansions.
Oh, I hope it's the Katy Perry
Sweet Treats.
Sweet Treats, yeah.
It's not, but I thought that too.
Darn.
So I already went in for more than $5. I'm probably going to start playing Battlefield 3 and Sims 3 and pick up Burnout Paradise again because I actually really, 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 really love that game.
And you know, you can also get Populous now.
They did. They added two more games to the Beat the Average.
Command & Conquer Red Alert 3 Uprising. And
which is a
those
standalone expansion of Red Alert 3.
Oh, okay, yeah. And that one is available on Steam as well. The other three
is Populous Origin only.
Yeah.
Okay, well that's fine. Populous is an incredible game, absolutely worth playing. And if I have to do it on Origin, I'll do it on Origin.
Yeah. So as of recording, there's about 3 days left. So hurry and support that if you want to. And they've sold almost 2 million bundles.
Oh, wowzers.
As of recording right now, so.
Yeah, we don't normally talk about these things and sort of sales and deals on air because they go stale before you listen to our show. But to me, it was really the important part of this news. The real takeaway is that EA is literally putting its money where its mouth is in Ray, inclusivity, and caring about these causes and championing them. And we here at GameBuie, we really support that. So, well
indeed.
Done. In other awesome money-spending news, on September 25th in Japan, Capcom is going to be releasing a 30th anniversary soundtrack titled Capcom 30th Anniversary Music Best Original and Arrange. There's a really incredible sample video up on YouTube that Capcom official posted. We're going to link it, of course, on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
Ooh, a little slow on the uptake, buddy. And I highly recommend you listen to it. In particular, there's a really tremendous Cutman arrange remix that you just really have to hear. It's so good. So good.
Mm-hmm. The Peter Molyneux designed game Dungeon Keeper is getting a reboot for mobile platforms.
What?
And, you know, this was originally from the 90s and from...
Yeah, I'm a big
Bullfrog
fan.
Bullfrog Productions.
Yes, I am a huge fan of that game. I feel like Dungeon Keeper is, like, the perfect... Like, that's, like... an essential GameBuie game, basically. If you like the kind of stuff we typically talk about on this show, run, don't walk to wherever you can get a copy of Dungeon Keeper, maybe GOG or something, and play it, because it's so good. Continue.
Oh, I was just going to move on to the next one.
Oh, okay, well, so this new Dungeon Keeper game is going to be on iPhone, iPad, iPod Touch, and Android devices this winter.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
great.
I normally worry in QQ about, like, oh, it's a mobile game. But I actually feel like that might be an agreeable thing for this style game design. The screenshots, it still looks like it keeps in the same vein of the original, albeit much prettier. So if the gameplay is there, I don't mind if you're a mobile game. Just be good.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a really, really neat little mobile game, so... in some unfortunate news, League of Legends has been hacked, and some encrypted credit cards could be at risk. You know, so Riot Games has said...
Just as an FYI, Dungeon Keeper is available on GOG.com for $6. Go grab it.
That sounds like a plan.
You were saying about League of Legends.
So Riot is saying that, you know, go change your password, so...
Yeah, I actually did get a warning email from them about this, because, you know, I don't play League anymore, but I did for quite some time. I was playing League, you know, for many hours a day.
Yeah, you know, before all that family unfriendly language started pervading
well,
the,
exactly so. That's literally quite why I stopped playing. I got tired of being called the bad F word. So, I wish I still played League. I actually really like it as a game. Anyone out there who is into MOBAs that wants to recommend one to me, I'm kind of all ears for it right now. But I'm sorry, go on.
So just make sure that you authenticate your account, etc., etc.
Oh, my stars and garters. Do you have something to say about this next one?
Oh, golly gosh. So Grand Theft Auto 5, according to the ratings board, and you know, these Grand Theft Auto games, not very family-friendly. Apparently, you can partake in the consumption of a substance that is illegal in most of the states.
Are we talking about wacky tobacco?
Yes. So, remember, winners don't do drugs.
I have to say, I'm from California. I think this is kind of awesome, and I really think that this speaks really interestingly. Again, I appreciate the shtick we're going with for this episode, so I'm going to keep it family-friendly. But I do have to say, I think this is really interesting for this style of game. It appears that you'll be able to go to, medicinal outlets to acquire your goods.
Oh, well, maybe the people have,
chemotherapy
that they're going through.
You're like something serious. I'm like, cataracts!
Oh, okay.
LOL, California.
Unfortunately, there's also some very, very bad words that are in the dialogue.
Okay, yeah, but that's not what we're talking about here. The point was that, you know, for what I think is a first, I think this is the first real, like, AAA game to really have this kind of content in it. The option to do that sort of thing, I mean. So it's very interesting. It's not really, I'm not just going to go out and play GTA 5 because, I can partake. But I do think it's interesting and, I'm interested to hear how it impacts the gameplay experience. Like if you get a munchie meter where you have to find Doritos within a certain time limit.
Oh, dear.
Moving on.
So, Amplitude Studios, who has developed Endless Space, is...
Endless Space, woohoo!
Has revealed a new game called, Endless Legend. And there's also Dungeon of the Endless. Okay,
yes, they announced two games. Dungeon of the Endless, which is a retro-style game, and also Endless Legend, which is a 4X strategy title.
Ooh, yes.
I'm here for both of these. I liked Endless Space a lot. I have a lot of faith in these guys to design a good, well-put-together game and to maintain it and upkeep it and improve it over time, something that I think their post-release of support of Endless Space has really shown them to be quality in that regard.
Well, I am definitely here for the 4X. The only thing that could be better would be a Disney-based 4X, where you are controlling different lands of Disneyland.
No! No! Endless Legend has been described by Amplitude Creative Director as a civilization fantasy game.
Oh, yes! I will be day one purchasing that item.
In other news relating to PC games I've enjoyed in the last year, XCOM Enemy Unknown will get its first expansion in November with the release of XCOM Enemy Within. This is going to hit on November 12th. It'll be available on PC and Mac for $30, while Xbox 360 and PS3 releases will be $40.
And that includes the original game.
Yes. As well as, content packs, apparently. So, cool.
Cool, cool, cool. Gravity Ghost will be opening pre-orders starting August 26th.
And Gravity Ghost has been a game that's been on the indie circuit for, I feel like, a year, like more than a year. Like, it's been notable at, like, PAX indie booths and stuff, and I feel like I've been hearing about this game for forever, so I'm really excited to finally be able to, buy it.
Yeah, and something that's really great, it's not about harming things. It's about flying around planets and collecting stars and all other sorts of whimsical, magical stuff.
Yeah, it looks really cute. It looks really compelling. Again, I like this sort of content, and I'm really excited for it. So I can't wait.
Sounds great.
Broken Sword, The Serpent's Curse. This is, of course, the revival of the Broken Sword adventure series. is coming to Vita. We don't have a whole lot of word yet. This game was successfully funded via Kickstarter last year, and again, will be coming to Vita now, in addition to the already confirmed PC, Mac, Linux, iOS, and Android releases.
All right. And we found out that Aquapazza, am I saying that right?
I believe so,
Aquapazza,
yeah.
Aquapazza is coming to North America for the holiday season for $30 on PS3.
Woo-hoo!
It's based on the current Japanese arcade spec.
We'll have original
Japanese voiceovers, and I think you were going to explain that it is a crossover game.
Yeah, this is a crossover between Tears to Tiara, Two Heart, and a bunch of other games by Aqua Plus. You know, this is one of those games that people in the fighting games community often talk about. It has a pretty hardcore fan base. So to me, this is exciting. I've wanted to play this game for a hot minute. I was even considering importing the Japanese retail release, but I won't have to do that now because this holiday season, I'll be playing a localized version.
Woo-hoo! All right.
And I think that does it for our newses.
Yeah, our newses.
Let's dig in a little bit to Gamescom and talk a little bit about some announcements that were made there. And really briefly, I want to mention, I thought it was really noteworthy that while Sony did an entire big press conference that was live streamed and everyone on the internet was talking about and tweeting about and posting on Facebook about, Microsoft didn't. There was very little Microsoft news out of this thing this year. There was a pretty notable one, though. It's sort of the first thing I heard out of the entire event, and that's why it's the first thing we're going to talk about here. And that is that Killer Instinct is going to be releasing in three forms when it comes out on the Xbox One, theoretically later this year. The first is the free-to-play pack, and that is the game for free with one playable character. And then the other characters will be available at the cost of $4.99 per character.
So that's kind of like a Dead or Alive 5 Ultimate sort of deal.
Yes, yes. And confirmed characters so far have been Jago, Saberwolf, Glacius, and Chief Thunder. And I have to say, as much as Chief Thunder was like a really offensive stereotype in the original release of this game, the reveal trailer for him that they also showed recently looks pretty good. So I'm excited for Chief Thunder in this game. The second option is the Combo Breaker Pack. That includes the first 8 characters that are going to be available for the game. That is the 6 that are coming out at launch, and early access for the 2 DLC characters that will be coming out after launch as like post-release support. This pack is going to be $19.99. Last but not least is the Killer Instinct Ultra Edition, which will retail, well, not retail, but will sell for $39.99. Obviously, Ultra Edition references Killer Instinct's trademarked Ultra Combo. I really just wanted to do that voice. This pack includes all 8 characters from the Combo Breaker bundle, also character costume packs, character accessory packs, and a Xbox One port of the original Killer Instinct arcade game.
Interesting. So, you know, as touchy as of a topic as the whole freemium thing is, particularly in the MMO market, we like flexible pricing structures here, and I kind of actually think this type of model is kind of neat.
You know, I strongly agree. I saw a lot of backlash on this topic on Twitter. Probably people with whom I was discussing this on Twitter are listening to this right now, like, oh, hell go, here come. And that is as adult as I'm going to say. They used that word in Hunchback of Notre Dame. I feel validated. I did not cross the line
yet. I think
yet.
They did in Pocahontas as well.
See? Still good. So, oh man, I feel like a failure as an adult that I could fire that off so easily. I didn't even have to think about that. But no, getting really back to my point, if I have one. I feel like for these big budget revivals, sometimes you have to scale down the scope of your release first because, you know, Microsoft is coming under a lot of fire for, you know, well, Microsoft and Double Helix, is coming under a lot of fire for there only being 6 characters at launch, with 2 more down the pipeline. It is worth mentioning, they've also discussed how they're viewing this in terms of, like, seasons, and that there will be another season of characters down the line after those 2 that'll be getting added. But to me, this is sort of how these revivals have to work. Like, if you want your... In this day and age, with the market as it is, reviving a franchise costs a lot of money. Putting the money into these sort of big presentation, AAA-style releases, if your scope is too big, your project budget balloons and you get canceled. If the only way they could work to make this budget work to bring Killer Instinct back is to do 6 characters now and 2 down the line, then honestly, I support that. I still remember, as many of our listeners probably do, the cancellation of Mega Man Legends 3 and Mega Man Legends Prototype, and how many of us would have loved the opportunity to have bought Mega Man Legends 3 Prototype and shown Capcom, like, no, there's an interest in this project, please continue reviving this. To me, this is the sort of opportunity afforded by a variable pricing structure like we're seeing with Killer Instinct. Like, if you believe in this revival and you want to see this, this is a really great opportunity for you to throw $20 down on this sort of proof of concept and say, you know, give me the product because I'm here for it. You have my money, so do this.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Excellent.
The Binding of Isaac is getting a PC, PS4, and PlayStation Vita remake called The Binding of Isaac Rebirth. It's going to have expanded gameplay, more characters, and like expanded story, enemies and items, and most notably a 16-bit graphical overhaul.
That's really interesting. I really enjoyed The Binding of Isaac. I have it on PC, and I'd be really interested in seeing how they do this graphic overhaul, and you know, they say there's going to be quote-unquote 50% new content. Steam discount for those who own the original game. That's me!
Yay!
So, I'm really excited for this. I can't wait for it to come out, and also very exciting that it's coming to, you know, PS4 and Vita.
So, speaking of Vita, we've got some new pricing information for North America. This includes So both models are going to be available for $200. I didn't realize
$199.99. The 3G Wi-Fi model and the Wi-Fi only model.
Interesting.
I foresee one of these getting taken out of production. I don't see why you would have two models at the same price with different feature sets. I don't think that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, I guess they'll honestly see which one sells more at this new price point.
Well, since it's more expensive to make the 3G model, I expect that to get axed.
Yeah.
But we'll see. I mean, I could be wrong. Lord knows it happens often.
Also notable, to a degree, is that memory card prices have been dropped. 4GB has dropped $5 down to $14.99. 8GB has dropped $10 down to $19.99. 16GB has dropped $20 down to $39.99. And 32GB has dropped $20 down to $79.99. So, still,
you know,
pretty expensive. But
still way too expensive. But as a Vita owner who actually mostly likes his Vita, I have to say this is really compelling to me, because I seriously would buy more Vita content if I had a bigger memory card. Like, I literally look on PSN and think, wow, if I had more than 8 gigs of space, I would buy probably, you know, another 5 or 6 games right now. But I literally can't fit these games on my card, so I'm not going to buy them.
Yeah, so at least it's a start.
So this is a start, and, you know, the 32 gig card is only $80 now. Probably at, you know, holiday time, it'll be on sale for even less, and maybe I'll finally be able to get one and start buying games that I want to play.
So we found out also that Minecraft will be a PS4 launch title. It'll also be coming to PS3 and Vita, and then somewhere down the line, Xbox One. So basically, Minecraft is available everywhere, and, you know, Minecraft is a very family-friendly game. Lots of kids like to play that game.
You know, most interesting to me is that the two platforms that would most benefit the game Minecraft, in my opinion, are the two platforms that aren't getting Minecraft.
Which are 3DS and Wii U?
Yeah. I feel like the inventory interface and crafting and how crafting works, those of you out there who play Minecraft know exactly what I'm talking about, would be way better with a touch screen. So, yeah. Maybe y'all need to get up on that.
And, you know, like I said, with the family-friendly audience of that game and a family-friendly audience of Nintendo consoles, it would be a good match.
Girl, you are killing me. Everybody's Gone to Rapture, a new game for PS4, was also revealed at Sony's event. This is made by British development studio The Chinese Room, whom you might be familiar with for their work on Dear Esther and Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of these guys. Obviously, I'm a huge fan of Amnesia and Dear Esther. I'm already in. Like, I'm getting a PS4 for fact, and I'm definitely going to get this game. So, bring it on.
So, Ninja-based platformer N++ will be coming to the PS4 this winter.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this. I liked N and N Plus both a lot. I will absolutely get N Double Plus. I don't know if it's called Double Plus. I'm just calling it that. There are two pluses.
And also in kind of similar news,
Double Plus good. I'm just going to speak in Newspeak now.
Haha. Vlambeer, who developed Ridiculous Fishing, is bringing Wasteland Kings to PS4 and Vita next year.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Ridiculous Fishing. That was a great game. And I'm really excited about Wasteland Kings.
It's an action roguelike that's talking about mutants, and it's kind of like a 60s through the 80s sci-fi novel-influenced world with radioactive waste.
And, you know, it's apparently going to be combining aspects from Super Crate Box, which they also did, and Ridiculous Fishing, as well as Luftthrossers. So I'm really, really excited about this game.
Also coming to PS4 and Vita in 2014 is Rogue Legacy.
Yeah, I've talked about Rogue Legacy quite a bit on this show. It comes as no surprise. I'm going to buy this game for PS4 and Vita. I love it. I hope it has cross-buy, so I only have to buy it once. But if it doesn't, then I guess I'm buying it twice, because that is a great game. Really superb.
Right, and it'll also be available for the PS3 as well.
You know what else they announced for PS3, PS4, and Vita? Is Polytron's Fez.
Oh, okay. Even though Phil Fish is retiring from the games industry.
Yeah, well, you know, Polytron still exists, and, you know, they're porting Fez to PS3, PS4, and Vita now. So this was, you know, also announced at Sony's event, and I'm very excited about it. I like Fez a lot.
We're also finding out that a lot of indie games are going to be coming to PS4 and Vita, including Hotline Miami 2, ROM number.
Volume, which is sort of a newly announced game from the creator of Thomas Was Alone. Also Velocity 2X.
And Starbound.
Starbound. So this is, to me, this is great news. You know, they also announced Samurai Gun, Switch Galaxy Ultra, Guns of Icarus Online, Final Horizon, Assault Android Cactus. And these were all, like, discussed at Sony's conference and confirmed on the PlayStation official blog. So, like, this is really exciting to me. Like, Sony really, really reaching out there for the indie stuff.
You know what else is very exciting?
What's that?
The game Rime, which is for PS4.
Oh, you would.
It looks like a mix between Ico, Wind Waker, and Journey.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly what you're into.
Yeah, it's by Spanish studio Tequila Works. Which you could probably get some tequila at the Mexico Pavilion in Epcot Center.
Stop doing what you're doing. Oh, hey! Also announced for Vita was Murasaki Baby. This looks like a pretty cool game. It is an indie side-scroller that relies heavily on the touchscreen, apparently. And the game's art was intentionally designed to look sort of like the work of Edward Gorey.
Oh, yeah, I know some people who aren't even gamers who would be like, oh, I'll play that.
Right? It looks very spooky, which I'm obviously super here for.
And, you know, of course, Edward Gorey was a big inspiration on Tim Burton, who did the Disney classic The Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh my god, don't be doing what you're doing. Why don't you just move us on? What, next topic, now.
Little Big Planet is getting a free-to-play hub on PS3. You can dress up, do challenges, and more.
Excellent. You know what else Sony announced is BigFest, a music festival simulator for Vita.
That sounds really, really, really cool.
Yeah, I feel like I should probably not be into this at all, but, even just looking at the photos where it's like, oh, it's literally a sim of, like, it's like Sim Music Fest. Like, oh my gosh, I need that right now. This looks so good. I love Sims. Sims as in simulations, not Sims like The Sims. And I love music and, you know, concerts and stuff. So, I'm kind of just here for this. It ticks all the boxes of my interest.
Mm-hmm.
Also super noteworthy is that Sony is working with several different publishers to do sort of like upgrade purchase plans for games that are coming out in the next few months, where if you own the PS3 version, you'll be able to purchase the PS4 version for $10. The first confirmed game and price is going to be Call of Duty Ghosts, which if you have on PS3, you'll be able to upgrade to the PS4 version for $10, Activision confirmed. Sony had announced at their event just that all of the games would be significantly discounted in this program, and they specifically named Ghosts, Assassin's Creed 4, Watch Dogs, and Battlefield 4. As well as calling out publishers, Activision, Ubisoft, EA, and Warner Brothers. So there are probably going to be more games here announced for this program. I think that is tremendous, and if all of these games upgrade for $10, I might just buy them all on PS3 and upgrade for $10. Because that's, for whatever reason, I feel like that's quite a deal and I need to take advantage of it.
Sounds good.
Gran Turismo 6 was confirmed for a December 6th release. This was, of course, the second most anticipated release date announcement of Sony's press conference. And it will have SRT Viper GTS and Audi R8 LMS car packs for pre-order bonuses if you're interested in this game.
Yeah, so it's the next best thing to being on the Autopia or the Cars Speedway ride at California Adventure.
Okay, PlayStation 4 is coming out in US on November 15th and November 29th in Europe. You cannot possibly have a Disney connection to this statement.
No, but I think I'm unfortunately going to have to cancel my PS4 pre-order just due to real-world money issues.
Okay, well, no one cares. Okay, no, people care a lot. I'm really sorry to hear that. Unless you have anything else to say, that about wraps it up.
Nope, I think it's time to get the magic started.
You know, let's just call it a day and end this episode here and not talk about Disney at all.
Gosh, no!
Okay, we can talk about Disney.
Gosh!
Thank you, of course, for listening to our show this far. We're only an hour in, and we're finally getting to the discussion. We are on a better track than we have been in recent weeks.
Well, we're just so excited to talk about this magical topic today.
Well, why don't you get us started then? We're going to start, obviously, with the most obvious starting point. Let's talk about some of the old NES and SNES Capcom Disney games.
Oh, those gems.
You know, we're revisiting this topic in large part due to the massive hype that was built both within the games community as well as lapsed gamers involving, DuckTales Remastered HD. Which, by the way, have you played that yet?
Oh, yes, I have.
Excellent. We'll talk about that. We'll get to that. But let's start off here easy. Let's talk about the original release of DuckTales.
You know, one of the things that's so funny about DuckTales is that people are, even before the HD remaster was announced, like, oh, that game is so hard. You know, like, I was never able to beat the moon level or, like, the Amazon level. I'm like, I don't really remember it being, like, overly challenging.
I'm happy you said that, because I was just going to say, you know, unpopular opinion, and I know I cut my teeth on, like, Mega Man and stuff, and, you know, harder games, but I just didn't feel like DuckTales initially was that hard in the first place. I mean, it's it's not easy. It's not a cakewalk. Yeah. It's not, oh, this is a child's game. But on the scale of things, I do not think it's quote-unquote NES hard, as the trope goes.
And I mean, I'll talk a little bit more about that when we talk about the HD remaster, but...
Well, in terms of the original game, please do talk about the difficulty now. This is the appropriate time to discuss.
Oh, I want to talk about the difficulty later as well, with the HD remaster.
Okay,
but,
okay.
Like I said, you know, I mean, as far as the difficulty of the original DuckTales, you know, like you said, it wasn't a cakewalk, although you could find cake to replenish your health.
Well played.
But, you know, I thought that it was, as a kid, I thought it was, like, just the right amount of challenging.
Yeah, and, you know, something else that really has endured is the love of the music in that game.
Yeah, that was one point I was going to definitely make. The Moon is probably the most famous song from that one, but I also love the Amazon music. And, I mean, the Transylvania level, great music, too. And, I mean, just really, really great music. Really exceptional level design. I'm particularly thinking of the Transylvania level with all the mirrors.
I love that, yeah.
And, you know, just really, just the crown jewel in the crown of the Disney games, I think.
Now, I actually do not agree with you there, although I think that probably popular opinion does agree with you there. But I feel like this is a Mega Man 2 situation where the gaming public at large thinks Mega Man 2 is the best Mega Man game, when in fact it's Mega Man 3.
So you think DuckTales 2 is the crown jewel?
No, not quite. I think that DuckTales is regarded as the crown jewel by most people. I think that a lot of real people that have played these games real hardcore would probably say it's Darkwing Duck.
Oh.
Although, you know, they both shared staff with Mega Man games, which is why that comparison came right to mind. You know, there was a really, really just beautifully creative period in Capcom's history there. I don't want to talk about it too much. I know we talked about it a little bit way back in the day when we talked about the history of Capcom. Just really a tremendous period of time where some really incredible platforming games were being designed, really great mechanics. Obviously, a lot of people still really fondly remember Scrooge McDuck's pogo cane bounce from the DuckTales games.
Yeah, and you know, something that was notable about DuckTales 2 that a lot of people don't remember is that you could upgrade the cane.
So oh, really?
That was very Mega Man-esque.
I don't remember that at all. That sounds very Mega Man X-esque.
Yes, you go to...
I just wanted to say X-esque.
You go to Gyro Gearloose, you know, who was the super nerdy inventor chicken from the DuckTales universe.
He was a chicken?
He was a chicken, yeah.
I didn't know that. I thought he was a weird duck.
Gyro Gearloose was a chicken.
I had no
idea.
That's
why his beak is little.
It is! Mind blown.
I am a longtime DuckTales fan.
I wouldn't brag about that. But go on.
So, you know, DuckTales and DuckTales 2, both really great. Something notable about DuckTales 2 is that because it had a limited run, it was, you know, later in the NES life cycle, you know, it's kind of a rarity. So, you know, but it was also really good. I mean, I think DuckTales 1 is the one.
Did you say rarity? BRB, buying one on eBay.
The funny thing is, I actually remember owning it on Game Boy, so...
That's not that weird. A lot of these Capcom, NES, Disney games did get Game Boy ports and Game Boy Advance ports and what have you.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a competent port of the NES version, but, you know, I think for some reason, it might just be because it was more of a limited production later in the life cycle that, that we didn't...
$120!
Wow, you know, that people... don't really talk about DuckTales 2 as much.
I didn't play it until years later. I played DuckTales, the original, when it came out, contemporaneous to its release. But I did not play DuckTales 2 until probably just, you know, 7 or 8 years ago. You know, obviously through less than completely legitimate means, just because, unfortunately, there's not a particularly legitimate way to play these games sometimes.
Right, and like you said, a lot of shared Mega Man staff, including Keiji Inafune-san, who did the artist on that. Gaiman. I mean,
his work on it really shines through. You can tell. It's not, yeah. It's not surprising.
And I mean, even then it looked great. You know, I mean, it was, I'm talking about DuckTales 1, of course, but you know, I mean, even though, Scrooge had the wrong color of coat, whatever, you know, it's not a big deal. It's just really exceptional game and really interesting to see the shared DNA with Mega Man.
Yeah, absolutely. That to me is the most interesting part about any Disney, Capcom NES game discussion is, sort of how these games were informed by and themselves did inform, sort of Capcom's quote unquote core output. You know, you have later on in the SNES era, you had, you know, the, Magical Quest games, which were themselves informing Mega Man X and, you know, Demon's Crest and that sort of thing. So there was real cross-pollination, and I think both the Capcom gamer games and the Capcom Disney games ultimately, I feel like, all benefited from this cross-pollination.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you want to talk about Magical Quest now or come back to it?
We'll come back to it.
Okay.
I want to sort of do it a little bit more retrospectively or chronologically. Yeah. I don't know. Why don't you take the game that I can see on your screen right now?
Well, yeah, that would be Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers, which was probably my second favorite. Although Darkwing Duck, those three are the crown jewels for me. Darkwing Duck, DuckTales, and Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers. And I think most people would probably agree.
For those of you out there who are following the What Am I Collecting Today saga, I am not buying this $120 copy of DuckTales 2 because it has a torn sticker and it's still $120. So no. Goodbye.
Yeah, so, Chip 'n Dale, I just remember very fondly as being a really fun two-player co-op game. Of course, you could play it single-player, but I remember playing it with my sister, two-player co-op. Just really, really, solid platformer. Shared staff with Mega Man 2 and Ghosts and Goblins, and probably its best cousin would be Bionic Commando.
Yeah, you know, I'm told that the multiplayer in that game is really, really notable. I have never actually played it two-player.
You've never played it two-player? I know what we're doing after we record this episode.
Well, I was just thinking last night, that I would probably wait and play it two-player as, like, a thing at some point with someone, IDK. So not you.
Oh.
I was thinking that would be a really cute date night thing. Shut up.
Oh. Okay. But, yeah, I just really, really loved it. You know, it was a little more linear than DuckTales was, because there was, like, a world map kind of that you flew on in your little...
Yeah, DuckTales is approached in terms of level selection more like a Mega Man game, again, where you pick which order you want to do the stages, and, you know, obviously it's not quite like Mega Man in that if you do Himalayas first, you don't really get a bonus on the moon. But, again, level selection is absolutely a thing in DuckTales that is not present in Chip 'n Dale.
Yeah, Chip 'n Dale, like we said, more like a Bionic Commando sort of.
Although Bionic Commando did itself have a map system where you could select your next area.
Yeah, so that's how it was with Chip 'n Dale, too.
Oh, was it? I don't remember that at all.
You maybe had, like, a couple choices.
I'm learning things on this episode.
You had a couple choices. Like, you could go north on the path or south on the path. I mean, I could be remembering that inaccurately, but...
It seems unlikely. I suspect you've probably put a lot of hours into this game, and I've put, like, an hour into this game.
Mm-hmm. And Chip 'n Dale Rescue Rangers 2, also very solid. The thing I remember most about it, funny enough, is that its plot was, I mean, you know, LOL plot in a Disney game. But the plot was based on, or that's kind of the start of the plot, was that there was a bomb threat, which was a little bit kind of
shocking.
Yeah. I remember there being a really awesome, like, theme park level world that was kind of the basis of it. It was kind of at a theme park at the end, so I just really remember that being super fun. It was also very late in the NES life cycle, but you know, again, very well done. This one was very linear. So, aside from the amusement park, so you can kind of do it before you confront a fat cat. So,
Oh, wow. You remember this game way better than I do. I don't know that I've ever really played the second one at all.
You know, like DuckTales, Chippendale 1, I think, is more memorable. But both solid games.
I studied the heck out of the maps in Nintendo Power, though. I do remember that rather very specifically.
Oh, everybody studied every map from Nintendo Power, I think.
I used to pore over those things, man. So good.
I think we need to talk about Darkwing Duck proper.
I think that that's the last NES game we're going to talk about.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Let's save the best for last. Let's talk about Adventures in the Magic Kingdom. You always go on and on and on and on and on and on about this game. So for the first time ever, please justify why you care so much.
Because I was like 6 years old, okay? This might be a time where our age difference makes a difference, but,
You make me sound like Rob Roberts.
You know, I think just, it was fun because it was just kind of a bunch of, like, little mini levels. There was an Autopia game, which was a little racing game. There was a game based on Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, where you kind of had to, like, figure out what path to go through to get to the right station at the end. And of course, you know, there's not really any variation, so once you know how to do it once, you can do it.
I'm so dumb because I was legit just like, oh, this game's about Disneyland.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not really specified which Magic Kingdom it was. And in fact, the layout is more like Disneyland, but on the cover is the Magic Kingdom from Walt Disney World. Yes, I know a lot about this game. There was a Space Mountain stage. It's not a first-person shooter, but it was a first-person, you have to do, to shoot asteroids. It's very timing intensive, so, I mean, I wouldn't say it's a rhythm game, but, you know, you have to, like, press the right button at the right time, move the right direction at the right time, or you will not make it through the level. There were also two side-scrolling platforming stages, Haunted Mansion, which was really scary, because if you got hit by a ghost, there was a very scary ghost on the, like, game over screen. You had to collect candles to throw at ghosts and try and get to the end of the stage. And then there was a Pirates of the Caribbean platforming level, which was Caribbean. Pirates of the Caribbean. Caribbean.
Go on.
Tomato, tomato. You had to rescue 6 maidens from the pirates, so that was my favorite of the stages.
We should play Disney games tonight while eating stuffed crust pizza.
That is what's going to happen. We can pretend that we're at Red Rockets Pizza Port in Tomorrowland.
Okay, continue with what you're saying.
So, it's a simple game in some ways, but it's fun. It's not terrible, and you know, there's a plot where you're this kid in, like, an Indiana Jones outfit. I don't really know why, because this was before Indiana Jones was a ride at Disneyland. But anyways, like, oh, you have to get the 6 keys to open the gate and allow the parade to begin.
What kind of Link to the Past ripoff is that?
No, I mean, it's not even, because it's like, oh, you know, it's a NES game. You know, it's like, oh, the end, the parade begins. There's not a ton of payoff, but, you know, it's not terrible at all.
Oh, all right.
Maybe you would disagree, but, I mean, I think I could foresee you actually liking this if you give it a try.
Maybe I will. Maybe I'll play it tonight, and we'll see. We'll see.
While we're eating stuffed crust pizza.
Exactly so. So, moving things along, why don't we talk a little bit about the last game I have in this Oh, no, I have 2 more. Oh, delightful. Let's knock Tailspin out of the way. What do you have to say about Tailspin?
Wasn't really a fan, but that could have been because I never liked Tailspin the cartoon at all.
Now, correct
me. I'd rather watch Gummy Bears than I would...
Bouncing here and there and everywhere.
And I was not a huge Gummy Bears fan. But I would rather watch Gummy Bears than I would as far as... Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, someone's a Gummy Bears fan.
They are the Gummy Bears.
I didn't realize this.
Shut up!
Oh, that's not very Disney-like of you. Gosh, you must be a Disney villain.
I secretly really liked Gummy Bears, I don't know.
Was Gummy Bears based on, like, the Gummy Bears snacks?
I mean, I would have to freaking assume...
Oh, language.
Yeah,
careful.
I was having a really hard time responding to that without cursing.
It was interesting that there was never a Gummy Bears game that I was aware of,
or
was there?
I assume there wasn't. Why don't you talk about Tailspin's game mechanics while I find out about Gummy Bears?
Like I said, I never really spent a lot of time playing it. So, I mean, I really just remember, like, flying around, shooting enemies.
Well, it was vaguely shootery, right? Like, it was kind of a shmup.
I don't know if you could really call it that, but, I mean, maybe. I think of it more of, remember that level of Sonic 2, where you're on the Tails plane, whatever that's called?
Yeah.
And the Sky Chase Zone? Is that what it was in Sonic 2?
I don't know all of the zones from Sonic by memory. The only one I really know is Sandopolis Zone, and that's because I wrote a fanfic about it once.
And that was in Sonic and Knuckles.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm just saying, that's the only Sonic Zone I know by memory.
I can name off all the Sonic Zones, but this isn't a Sonic episode, this is a Disney episode. So remember that level in Sonic 2,
How are
right?
you gonna say that you can name all the Sonic Act Zones when not 20 seconds ago you were like, wait, this was called the Sky Chase Zone, right? Well, no, clearly you can't.
Well, because
Continue. Because
there were so many that
Continue.
There was, like, Sky Sanctuary Zone.
This is a Disney
one.
Episode, not a Sonic episode. Continue. We should do a Sonic episode sometime.
I thought you never wanted to do one.
I didn't, but now I do.
It was the Sky Chase Zone.
Okay, well, continue. This is not...
So do you remember where you're on the plane and you cannot move from the plane?
This is Nossum.
That's basically what I remember, except you're not jumping off the plane with Sonic, you know, like jumping...
Okay, that sounds really awful.
As far as being a Capcom game and a, you know, a Capcom Disney game, it was the... one that I never really cared for. But again, that could be because I did not like Tailspin at all. Like, when that was on the Disney afternoon, I was like, okay, I'm doing my homework now.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting, I was sort of misreading this list. We actually have a couple more games to talk about. So why don't you talk a little bit about The Little Mermaid? I know you have a lot of feelings about that.
Under the sea. Oh, I actually think The Little Mermaid is a really clever game.
All right.
The mechanics basically involve trapping enemies in bubbles and then kind of using those to, like, either knock out other enemies, or you can use, like... So, like, you can trap some little fish in a bubble and then launch it at the boss with your tail.
So it's like Mega Man meets Bubble Bobble.
It kind of is, because there are different bubble power-ups.
I did know that. I'm just leading the discussion.
Yeah, because there's, you know, you just start with, like, a kind of default bubble, which would be, like, your default Mega
Buster. Your standard
Buster. But then there's, you know, like, a bigger bubble. I'm wanting to say that there were, like, you know, I can't remember all of the bubble power-ups, but, you know, just...
Epic failure.
But, you know, like, really interesting... level design because it took place under the sea, you know? So,
where it's better, down where it's wetter, take it from me.
And the only other notable mermaid-based gameplay I can remember is from Barbie.
Yeah, you're killing me, Smalls. Alright, so, what else notable can you tell me about The Little Mermaid by Disney?
Just that, you know, really, I remember the bosses being kind of clever, boss mechanics. I mean, I haven't played Little Mermaid as recently. It wasn't my favorite of the Capcom Disney games, but it wasn't bad.
Well, then let's talk about the one that I think probably is your favorite. Let's talk about Bonkers the Bobcat.
Really? I'd rather talk about Bubsy the Bobcat. Sorry.
Like, that's sad. When you make a bobcat that's so jank that, you know, Bubsy is better, Like, you need to look at your life, look at your choices as an artistic person.
Yeah.
I think something interesting about Bonkers so that we can move on.
Well, I was going to say that Bonkers is, like, kind of like the Disney afternoon show that people forget about.
Okay, but we are not Disney afternoon, Bowie. Talk about the game.
Well, this was an SNES game, so we're kind of moving into SNES territory.
I think that's where we're at. I do want to go back to Darkwing Duck on NES, but let's talk about a couple SNES ones, and then we'll do Darkwing Duck, and then we'll do the final last SNES one. So let's do it. Tell me about Bonkers. Why are you so hesitant to talk about Bonkers?
Because I didn't really like it that much. I mean, it was just... I mean, it was, you know, it was... Bonkers for Super NES was not a terrible platformer, but it wasn't really anything special. I guess that's what I'm trying to get at. Which is kind of just Bonkers in a nutshell, like, for everything. Bonkers wasn't really anything special. If you feel differently, hashtag GameBuoyExtra. If you feel Bonkers is special, please tell me why.
I have a way better GameBuoyExtra for later. So I guess we're just going to have two Game Buoy extras.
Not the first time.
Let's talk about a game that actually maybe is probably a lot of people's favorite. Let's talk about the SNES Capcom Aladdin game.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have more to say about the other Aladdin game.
You know, funny enough, I preferred the Capcom one. I mean,
I do not dislike the Capcom one at all. It's just not the one that I spent the most time with. So why don't you talk about the Aladdin
game? Well, my favorite thing about the Aladdin Capcom game, you know, it's just a really complex platformer. There's a lot of really demanding jumps, but there were sort of like almost hidden mechanics. Lots of things where like there are certain jumps that are only manageable if you, do the jump while like holding the run button and holding jump in order to get enough boost. Sort of in that, like, Mario 3, Mario World style, where people who don't play these games don't even realize that you can jump super high by bouncing off enemies while holding buttons. And so to me, it made this Aladdin game, it turned into, like, a really complex and really demanding sort of platforming strategy with a really great sense of momentum. There are sequences where if you're timing your jumps right and bouncing, you can just play it like a speed run. And
yeah,
it's just really fulfilling. There's a lot of hidden items in sort of a very, again, you know, Mega Man is sort of the gold bar standard I keep going to. It reminds me very much of, like, the Mega Man X games where, like, oh, you want to fall down that pit just to see if there's, like, a hidden jewel in the case of Aladdin, you know, down there. So to me... that the Aladdin SNES game offers more in terms of, again, having this really demanding platforming, having stuff hidden around. I feel like the last level or the last boss or the ending or something, you have to find a certain number of the hidden objects, the hidden gems, in order to open it.
It was definitely a lot more acrobatic.
And I just liked it. I like platforming. That is one of my favorite things to do in games is super tricky jumps and stuff.
So you would say that the SNES version was one jump ahead of the Genesis version then. Is that what you're saying?
I am real well played. Yes, I would say that, and also well played. Do you have anything to say about that?
You know, like I said, it was definitely a lot more acrobatic, kind of you know, like you said, more focused on how the level... So, I mean, I guess the level design was more complex. And I'm not saying that it's inferior. I'm just saying that it was a completely different experience from the Genesis version.
It is. And, you know, we'll talk about that. That is actually a talking point we're going to hit in a little bit. So I don't want to tarry too long. But right. I just felt like the Genesis one was more of like, oh, there's a combat focus. Fun. That's just not what I was looking for comparatively.
Right, right. I understand that.
Let's see. Next on my list of games to discuss, let's talk about Mickey Mouse and the Magical Quest 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, yes. Let's talk about that. The time has come. Also, vaguely Mega Man in a way.
This game, as far as I understand, shares staff between the Mega Man X games and Demon's Crest. And, you know, it has some really just gorgeous sprite work.
Very gorgeous.
There's a really super fun and compelling ability switching mechanic. I'm always into that, games where you collect abilities and grow, and You know, you look at all my favorite genres, Metroidvanias and what have you. I'm really into that kind of stuff. I remember, I don't know if it was the first Magical Quest or if it was the second or third, but there's like some cool sequences where you had to do platforming while ability changing, you know, your costume or whatever, to like pull out grappling hooks mid-jump to then grapple.
I definitely remember doing some grappling hook action in the second game. The second game was the one that I remember the most fondly because it had two-player co-op, again. So very clever. It was Mickey and Minnie, and I don't think Minnie was available in the original version. I think it was just Mickey, and you took turns alternating.
I believe that's true, yeah.
So I thought that the second one really was a step up. And I say that the second one is the one I remember most fondly because we didn't actually get the third one until it came out for GBA.
Did we not?
Nope, it was only on the Super Famicom. And so I missed out on it on the GBA. So, you said you had played that one, though, it featured Donald Duck and Mickey.
Yeah, I definitely played it. I played the GBA version as well, but I, for some reason, thought that I had played it on Super Nintendo. But, I mean, obviously the internet says that's not a thing that happened. I wasn't really game importing at that time, so I don't know. Strange.
But yeah, I mean, really, really great level design and the costume mechanics. I remember, I seem to really remember in the second one liking the one where you had a vacuum cleaner. And then there was a safari suit, which let you do the grappling hook. And there was a cowboy outfit where you kind of had a little, like, cork gun.
Yeah. Oh, man. I really want to play this game right now.
Magical Quest 2, it actually was originally released under the title Great Circus Mystery, starring Mickey and Minnie. I don't know why they didn't keep the Magical Quest branding, but it was a Magical Quest game. I mean, it was in every way a sequel, you know? So it's just really different Mega Man influence, like you said, more of a Mega Man X influence.
And in the first game,
if you think of the way, I just have something that I really need to say.
Uh-huh, of course.
That if you think of the way that Mega Man X feels different to play than Mega Man NES games, like, you know, you can climb on walls, etc. Like, just that different feel of platforming is what sets this apart from the NES Capcom platformers, is what I would say.
And, you know, I want to point out, in particular in this this first Magical Quest game, the music was done by Mari Yamaguchi, who also did the music for Breath of Fire, Mega Man 5, Fight 2, Street Fighter 2 Champion Edition for TurboGrafx 16. She came back to work with Integreates on Mega Man 10. She did some music for Super Ghouls and Ghosts. She did music for UN Squadron. So, I mean, like, this Magical Quest series, and again, you know, this is sort of why I think it's really worth a real focus here in this episode, it shares DNA with some really just incredibly well-known and well-loved Capcom games over the years. So if you like some of these other games we're talking about, I think it absolutely behooves you to look into, in particular, the Magical Quest games. If you love, you know, these Mega Man games, and especially the Mega Man X games, I think you would find something to love about Magical Quest.
Now, like I said, I never had the chance to play Magical Quest 3, but my understanding of it is that Mickey and Donald, for some of the costumes, had differences. Like, Mickey's medieval costume was like a shining knight in shining armor, and, like, you know, if you went into the water, you would sink, and then Donald's was like a wooden barrel armor that let you float.
Yeah, that is the case. You know, the second costume in that game, it was like you were lumberjacks that could climb or something, and they were basically the exact same, like their ropes had a different arc when they threw them or something.
So that's an interesting evolution.
But it was, yeah, the two characters were treated as different with, you know, slightly different takes on the same abilities.
Because in the second game, Mickey and Minnie had the same mechanics. So, which I mean was not bad at all. But I just really fondly remember both 1 and 2, but particularly 2. Just, you know, there was a plot about, oh, the circus is disappearing. It's the great circus mystery. But, you know, it wasn't really like... I don't really know why they had to have the circus plot kind of framing it, because, like, there was, like, a haunted house level. There was a safari level. And I don't think it really needed that circus plot to really be a good game, you know? Yeah, like, it didn't detract from it, but it didn't really add anything to it. So I think if you're interested in playing these games, the best way to check them out, if you have access to a Game Boy Advance, I mean, it probably would be a little hard to track them down, but if you can track them down, there are GBA releases of all three of them. I highly recommend putting some time into them if you have any interest whatsoever.
Yeah, keep talking for a minute, because I still have an eBay window open from earlier. I'm going to price that.
You know, and I think that the thing that's kind of interesting that I think about it is that until we saw, you know, the HD remaster for DuckTales, that's really one of the only ones that I can think of that really got a re-release later on. Because, you know, Chip and Dale, we've yet to see any sort of re-release. Adventures in the Magic Kingdom obviously didn't see a re-release.
Yeah, you can get all three of the Magical Quest games for like $20. Like, all of them for
$20.
Wow. There are a lot of them. I know that I bought all three, you know, as they were coming out on the GBA, and they're great ports. I'm very happy with them.
Yeah.
So, I'm sorry. Go on.
No, that's just what I was going to say, is that it's kind of interesting that those games are the ones that saw re-releases, you know, ports. And despite not, I mean, I wouldn't say that they weren't celebrated. I mean, I think they were very positively received. But, you know, obviously DuckTales is the one that everyone, with their nostalgia lens, was just joyous over when it was announced as an HD remaster. So, just interesting that those were the ones to get remade, ported, re-released, however you want to say it.
Well, let's talk about Darkwing Duck, because we've already been talking about Disney for like 40 minutes.
When in trouble you call D.W.
Darkwing Duck! Darkwing Duck!
So, yeah, I think Darkwing Duck is notable for being so Mega Man-esque.
It was actually running on Mega Man 5's engine.
Yeah, I know. I know. Again, that's why.
But it was really Mega Man.
It plays very much like just straight up an alternate reality Mega Man game. Like, oh, this is just a Mega Man game that's not Mega Man.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, the weapons was really a big focus of it. Really
going into a level, getting through the level, and then having the boss room.
Mm-hmm.
It's just absolutely Mega Man-esque. And, you know, this is a game that is very often called for remakes.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about this a little bit once we get to sort of more modern games, but a lot of people have been asking Way Forward to do Darkwing Duck HD next.
I would be definitely here for that. You know, like you said, it's very much just Mega Man 5 with a Darkwing Duck skin instead of fighting... I can't think of any of the Mega Man 5 bosses. What are Mega Man 5?
Napalm Man.
Instead of fighting Napalm Man, you're fighting Megavolt. Or that one that's like a plant guy. Remember that one? Remember that bad guy from Darkwing Duck, the plant guy? Megavolt was my favorite. Because he was kind of like a goofy type dog.
You probably like Megavolt because he reminds you of one of the characters from a Goofy movie. Powerline, or what was it?
Megavolt is nothing like Powerline. How dare you? You do not insinuate that a villain is like Powerline. Powerline is basically like...
I have serious misgivings about putting this episode on the internet, because
what?
People are going to know how big of nerds we are.
Powerline is basically like Prince in the Disney universe.
I'm never getting laid again. Shit.
Ah, no! Shame on you. Time out.
Oh, no.
Time out.
I was doing so good. Okay, you know what? I'm going to keep it going. I'm not just going to go all crazy town on cursing now. So yeah, Darkwing Duck, you, please tell me something interesting about it and stop talking about comparing Disney characters between features and movies and shows and stuff.
You could deflect attacks with your cape.
Oh, that's neat. And not Mega Man-y.
Yeah, so, I mean, it wasn't just a Mega Man clone. But, I mean, you know, definitely run, 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 jump, 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 shoot, 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 change your weapons.
Yeah.
Mega Man.
Yeah. Does he have a slide?
I don't remember.
Gasp. I gasped and then said gasp.
I noticed that you said that, you silly goose.
Okay, stop. Continue.
Yeah, Darkwing Duck, I would be clamoring for a remake as well. Yeah, it was just very, very well designed. And I mean, like we said, one of the crown jewels of Disney's,
yeah.
Capcom Disney
crown. To me, the real crown jewels, and I know that we covered this very briefly, but to me, the crown jewels of the Disney Capcom partnership are Donald Duck and Magical Quest 1. However, in the annals of gaming history, there is a surprising contender for most important Disney Capcom game. And I submit
Wait,
to
you...
Wait,
did you mean Darkwing Duck or you said Donald Duck. Did you mean Darkwing Duck?
I did mean Darkwing Duck. Sorry about it.
Drake Mallard, not Donald Duck.
There is a very specific, very important Super Nintendo Disney game that we're going to wrap up our discussing Capcom Disney.
I know which one you're talking about.
Of course you do. You literally have my show notes in front of you. We're going to talk about Goof Troop.
Yeah.
Now, I hated Goof Troop.
But the thing is that's so weird is that Goof Troop was like the genesis for a Goofy movie, which is, like, so good.
Yeah, no, and I love a Goofy movie. I freaking love a Goofy movie.
So you hated Goof Troop, the show?
I did not care. You know, I say hated, I didn't care for it.
It was all right.
But in any event, that's not really what we're here for. I didn't care for the game either, actually. You know, this is really notable, though, because it was the third or fourth game directed by Shinji Mikami. You are probably familiar with Shinji Mikami via his work on Resident Evil, Vanquish, we have an Evil Within coming. You know, he is now a superstar game director. Most people who listen to Game Buoy know who Shinji Mikami is, by name. And, Goof Troop
for SNES is basically a survival horror game.
For SNES, Goof Troop for SNES is actually the, foundation upon which Resident Evil 1 for PlayStation 1 was built.
It was basically, wasn't it built, like,
it was
off
built
of the Goof Troop engine?
On that engine, yeah. Like, there exists in code, in the code of Resident Evil, to this day, as I understand it, still references to what was done for Goof Troop. You know, as a game, Resident Evil's existence owes something to Goof Troop. That's really, to me, the super interesting, just like, what? And you look at Shinji Mikami, and of course, Goof Troop was his work, as was Resident Evil shortly thereafter. He also worked on, the SNES Aladdin game, of which I was a huge fan. But, to me, Goof Troop, not a super interesting game. I seem to recall it had a hookshot adjacent mechanic, where it was like, oh, you have some sort of hook that pulls some blocks toward you or something. But
I kind of remember, I don't know, because I spent like maybe like 20 minutes with that game in my entire life, but I remember it being more like The Adventures of Lolo.
Well, yeah, it was. It was like a top-down, grid-based sort of block puzzle-y bit thing with awkward
survival,
controls.
With survival elements, but no suicide button.
Oh, yeah, there was a suicide button in Lolo. That's very sad. But yeah, Goof Troop... Again, historically important to gaming as, you know, a medium, I would argue, because again, I think that Resident Evil is a very important game and that Shinji Mikami went on to be a very important figure.
And by the way, you're not listening to an April Fool's episode. Yes, we just said that Goof Troop is important to the history of gaming.
Yeah.
Actual
well,
point.
Yeah, I actually stand behind that statement.
Yeah.
I kind of don't really have a lot more to talk about Capcom. I really wanted to hit that button on Goof Troop at the end, and I just did. So let's talk about some non-Capcom games. I'm going to talk about one about which I have particularly strong feelings, and then you can talk about one about which I know you have strong feelings. And since we're nearly 2 hours into recording, I'm just going to say that we need to really kick this up.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of the other titles after this, we can kind of just hammer off some quick discussion and facts about as we see fit.
You know what game we're going to talk about a lot? The Lion King! I want to say, man, so I got The Lion King when it was brand new. I got it for Genesis.
Yeah. Did you get the Genesis bundle? Oh, no, because you probably had a Genesis.
I actually did get the Genesis bundle, even though I had already had a Genesis.
Whoa. Well, because Lion King was, like, really big deal back in
'94. Lion King was a big deal to me. I was in honor chorus in school when it came out.
Did you sing Circle of Life?
We actually did an entire set of Lion King vocal arrangements.
Really?
Yeah, like I can still do the chants and stuff. Like it's pretty intense.
So you're like, "Ah, la 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 la."
You're just saying words that vaguely sound correct. That's not
I can't chant in Swahili, I'm sorry.
You should be.
I'm sorry that I can't chant in Swahili like you do, but anyways,
they taught it to me in school.
Lion King.
You know, my favorite thing about Lion King is the roar button, because baby Simba, and you know, let me set this up. You go through this game, it's a platformer, a lot of elements that are sort of Prince of Persia adjacent. You know, lots of climbing, lots of platforming, lots of scaling. There's really kind of interesting forced scrolling level where you're on the back of an ostrich and you have to time all kinds of really tricky, complex double jumps.
I loved the "I just can't wait to be king" level, which is what you were talking about, where you're jumping on the giraffes and the...
Well, that's not the forced scrolling level.
Oh, yeah. I see what you mean now. Okay, yeah.
They are actually, like, the same sequence. Like, that is immediately before, where you're looking for all the right pink monkeys to throw you in the correct direction or whatever. And then you end up on the back of an ostrich, and then that's where you have the forced scrolling sequence.
That was tough for me as, like, a 10-year-old kid.
Well, there was one particular double jump that had a really interesting timing where, you know, normally you have a double jump mechanic and your forced scrolling sequences, you want to do your double jump at the apex of your jump. Mm-hmm. And there was one jump there where you wanted to, like, sort of hit your apex and then come down, like, a quarter of the way before initiating your second jump. And it was really tricky. I was the only person in my neighborhood who could do that jump. Like, literally people with whom I wasn't friends would come and ask me to come just do that jump for them. Like, I would go to people's houses for, like, 5 minutes to do this tricky jump for them and then leave.
Oh, they used you.
Welcome to my life. That's really sad. Let's not do this. I love Lion King.
One thing I want to say about the Lion King.
As you progress through the game, Simba's model changes. He grows older. Your abilities change. You get, like, a swipe button and stuff. But you still keep a roar button. But when you're baby Simba in the first stage or two...
You're working on your roar!
When you press the button instead of a roar, it's just like a little...
meow.
And it's so cute. Like, even just thinking about it, I'm just like, ah!
I feel like we need to watch The Lion King and have a good cry.
I just really want to watch... Or I really just want to play Lion King. Like, I need to... I still have my cartridge of this for Genesis. Yeah. Like, I might need to dig it up right now.
The Lion King... just had a beautiful, beautiful art. I mean, you know, this was a cross-platform game, Super Nintendo, Genesis. I think it also had, like, Game Gear, Game Boy ports, and all that sort of thing. Maybe not Game Boy, I don't remember. But I know it was definitely SNES and Genesis. And, you know, Genesis games had varying quality of art, I would say. But, I mean, I think it was probably one of the most beautiful Genesis games ever, you know, maybe aside from, like, some of the Sonic games, like Sonic 3, which was really just a visual marvel. And I'm talking about Sonic again, wow. But really also notable, and along with another title that I want to talk about in a minute, which was also by Virgin Interactive. This was Virgin Interactive did this game. They worked with Disney animators. on the art for this game. And the other game that happened with was Genesis version of Aladdin, also by Disney Interactive.
Yeah. And well, again, we're going to talk a little bit more about the Disney Aladdin Genesis game.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to touch on that really quick. But yeah, Lion King, just a gem of a game for a gem of a movie.
Why don't you talk about Pocahontas? I've never played this. This was a Genesis game, yeah?
I've only played it a little bit. It was a Genesis game. It was by Funcom.
Oh, neat.
And I just remember that, like, if you painted with all the colors of the wind... No. I don't, historical inaccuracies aside, Pocahontas is a beautiful movie.
It really is.
I cry every time. That said, the thing that was neat about Pocahontas is, like, if you communed with the forest animals, like, you could do different things. You started out with your faithful raccoon companion, Miko, who would help you, like, do stuff, and you would switch between them. But then you collected, like, the spirits of the forest animals that would allow you different abilities. So I didn't spend a lot of time with that game, but, you know, it was... Number one by Funcom, so kind of a notable entry in their history. And, you know, kind of an interesting mechanic there. So, that's all I really have to say about Pocahontas.
Oh, excellent. You know, I've never played it, but you make me want to seek it out.
It's worth at least giving it a try.
Do you know what game I really, really loved was Disney Interactive's Gargoyles for Genesis.
Okay.
This was, of course, an extremely dark game. It was sort of a very standard 2D platformer, very combat focused. It was a very hard game. I recall gaming mags back then, sort of tearing this game apart for being really difficult. You know, there was a lot of unavoidable cheap shot hits from enemies. A lot of enemies took multiple attacks to hit. But it had a good feel. You played as Goliath. He ran really fast. He had like a good little charge. He had good jumps and, like, little, like, glidey mechanic. And I found it really compelling. I really liked it. I still occasionally, when I have my Genesis hooked up, will play it.
Yeah. And, I mean, I feel like you probably had a fondness for it because not only were you a fan of Gargoyles, but, you know, Demon's Crest, so.
Yeah, yeah. No, I like glidey mechanics. I like... platformers. I'm a huge fan of Gargoyles as a series.
You're a huge fan of Gargoyles as an item. Like, you like Gargoyles, don't you?
Well, I do generically like Gargoyles, and specifically I like Disney's Gargoyles. You know, I have all of, like, the graphic novels of the comic series, and, you know, they just finally put out Gargoyles Season 2 Part 2 on DVD, and that
was really exciting
for me.
Oh, that's big news.
So, yeah, no, I'm a big fan, and maybe that colors a little bit why I like this game so much, because taking a step back, like, there's not that much to it. It's like run and jump and punch humans that are trying to kill you for being different.
Wow.
But I'm in for it. I like it. Yeah. Why don't you talk a little bit about Mickey Mouse Capade, which you totally misspelled here.
Do I have to?
Yeah.
It was... a Hudson Soft game.
This was released in Japan, of course, as Mickey Mouse Fushigi no Kuni no Daiboken.
Which translates roughly to what?
Mysterious Land of Adventure?
It actually was commonly translated as Mickey Mouse's Adventure in Wonderland, because the original game was based heavily on Alice. And, you know, like, the Cheshire Cat was an enemy, a boss enemy, which is kind of weird, because Cheshire Cat wasn't really your enemy. I mean, I guess everyone was kind of your enemy in Wonderland. That movie was crazy. But, it was just kind of more generic in the American release. It was kind of not so great. Did you have any fondness for Mickey Mouse Capade?
I say not particularly now, but, you know, at the time I played through it repeatedly. It was two-player co-op, and this was during a period in my life where I did have a friend that played video games. So this was a game we would often play. I still remember where all of, like, the hidden items were that you needed in order to complete the game, because you'd have to, like, literally fire your stars or whatever at, like, empty spots on the screen. And you'd have to shoot them, like, 20 times to make the item appear. Like, It was some real like when people think of like poor NES game design, like this is the kind of mechanic people are thinking about.
Yeah.
I played it enough that even though I didn't like it, I still like it.
Eh. Okay. Can we talk about a better game? A better series of games?
Yeah.
Castle of Illusion and World of Illusion, which of course we will bring up again during the HD. Well, kind of. We'll talk about it a little bit. For me, World of Illusion was the one that I just remember so fondly. And I actually take it back. I think World of Illusion might have been one of the most gorgeous Genesis games ever made. Just, I mean, above and beyond what Castle of Illusion... Castle of Illusion wasn't ugly, but, I mean, you know, it was an earlier-ish Genesis game. World of Illusion was just, like, amazing. Do you remember the Mickey and the Beanstalk level where you're, like, jumping amongst oversized bugs and on vines and all that? I was asking, do you remember?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, I do.
Do you have things to say about Castle of Illusion? Because World of Illusion is really the one that was the...
World of Illusion was the one I liked. I still play this game on my old blog when Nintendo first announced the Virtual Console was going to have Genesis games. I, like, flailed and did a list of games that needed to come to Virtual Console, and the first one, the one on top of my list, was World of Illusion.
Yeah.
I effing love that game.
Effing meaning fantasticking?
Yeah, I fantasticking love that game. Fantasticking.
Fantasyland.
No, I don't fantasy landing love this game. It's just, I really like it. You know, one thing I really appreciate about this game, even still when I replay, I still occasionally see things I've never seen. Even though I played this thing probably 50 times or more, all the way through, I mean, because there are branching pathways in that game. And there are some alternate routes that I've still, like, have probably not seen.
Well, that means I haven't seen them either, because you're
some
the...
Some routes...
You're the king of alternate routes in games, so...
That's like, one of my favorite mechanics in a game can have, is, like, alternate branching pathways and, like, hidden exits and stuff like that. I live for that. And World of Illusion has a lot of them. Some of them are just dependent on, like, if there are two players playing. Some of them are dependent on, like, timing and jumping and... hitting this object or that enemy. And I still, like, I've never sat down with a fact to be like, what haven't I seen? And maybe someday I should, but...
Or maybe you should just experience it organically.
Well, that's sort of what I've been doing for the last 20 years.
We'll continue.
But I just, incredible game. Lots, just really beautiful artwork, really good music. I still remember a lot of the compositions in that game.
Yeah,
there were some interesting boss mechanics.
There were, yeah.
You know, just a lot of really cool levels. Like, there was a Candy Cake Land level. There was an underwater level. There was, like, a Starry Night, Icy Fantasia-y style-looking level. There was a cavern level with, like, magic carpets and giant spider webs that you could fall through.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that game. I like the variety of it. I like... all of these really unique, interesting mechanics.
I mean, it really took what was good about Castle of Illusion and just increased it tenfold.
Yeah, I agree with that assessment. I really do. We should probably move on, because this isn't World of Illusion BUI.
It should be.
Maybe.
WorldofIllusionBUI.org.
Fantasia for Genesis by Infogrames.
There was a Fantasia game for Genesis by Infogrames?
Yeah, it was actually pretty popular at the time.
Was it a music-based game?
No. It's almost sort of like a beginner's Castle of Illusion.
Oh, so you're probably like, oh, you're Mickey the Sorcerer's Apprentice and other Fantasia things.
Yeah, it's more basic than the later games, but it's very similar in style.
Interesting. Is there, like, you know, the Night on Bald Mountain sequence in Fantasia? Is there a sequence in the game based on that?
Yeah.
I always was, like, scared of that as a kid.
There were four worlds in the game. They were each based on a different element. And the fire world was Night on Bald Mountain and Fugue in D minor.
Oh, and did it have musical arrangements of all of the... Psalms as well?
I seem to recall that it did, yeah.
It would kind of be a disappointment if it didn't, you know?
Yeah, it's as a game, again, unfortunately, as a game, it's not very good. But it's a really interesting footnote, because a lot of people think about these style of Mickey games, starting with, like, Castle of Illusion. But, again, Fantasia, for me, is fairly similar and sort of the starting point of that line of games.
Interesting. So we have a couple of Mickey-based games. Well,
yeah, and we need to step it up.
Mickey-centric games to talk about.
Let's do it.
Why don't you tell us about Mickey Mania by Traveler's Tales?
Mickey Mania was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful game. In particular, it really got just high accolades for its art design. You know, you sort of went through various eras of Mickey Mouse. So there was all of these different, like, Steamboat Willie Mickey level.
Yeah, that's right.
And just really something very special in terms of its art presentation. It had the subtitle, The Timeless Adventures of Mickey Mouse, upon its release here in the U.S. It hit for Mega Drive / Genesis, Sega CD, Super Nintendo, and it even later on got a PlayStation port in Europe. This was the first game that a game designer, rather notable now for his work on, you know, Dead or Alive, God of War, and Twisted Metal, David Jaffe worked on this game.
Oh!
And this was one of the ones that, you know, they worked with, Traveler's Tales worked with Disney animators on, similar to how we were talking about with Lion King and Aladdin. This was another one of those games that Disney animators worked on.
You know what was...
And you went through, there were levels based on Steamboat Willie, The Mad Doctor, Band Concert, Lonesome Ghosts, Mickey and the Beanstalk, The Prince and the Pauper, and it had all kinds of really cool, like, art flourishes based specifically on these movies. Your player sprite changed based on, you know, what world you were in. It was just really cool, mm-hmm. very, very...
It's just so interesting to me that I thought this was almost as good as World of Illusion. I don't think it was better, but I think it was almost as good.
Well, it's on that tier of just being a high-quality game, even though the actual gameplay, it's kind of just like a bog-standard platformer, but it's so pretty.
Yeah, I mean, it's just that Steamboat Willie level is just so, so memorable.
Yeah, that was really quite rather impressive.
I mean, I would like to see an HD remaster of this, perhaps. I mean, it's not my priority, but...
I'd play it again if it were, like, if... Oh, gosh, you know, it just occurred to me, I think overseas Mickey Mania may be available on PSN if you're in the EU territories.
Oh.
As a PS1 classic.
Interesting.
Moving on.
So, I want to... just really quickly talk about Mickey Speedway USA by Rare.
While you're at it, can you also talk about Mickey's Racing Adventure? Let's two for
if
one.
I must. Mickey Speedway USA was a Mario Kart clone. It was by Rare, who also did Diddy Kong Racing. It was not as cool as Diddy Kong Racing. It was just basically a Mario Kart clone. But it wasn't bad. You know, there were a lot of Mario Kart clones back then. It could have been worse. Mickey's Racing Adventure was for Game Boy Color and was terrible.
Contextualize terrible for me.
It was ugly. I didn't like it. It controlled terribly. Did you play Mickey's Racing Adventure?
I didn't. I've only heard about it. I know some people who actually really quite liked it. That's why I was sort of asking you for more information, because I actually had in my head thought this was like a loved game.
It might have been. I didn't like it.
Which is why I asked you to illuminate your displeasure.
It was just, you know, there's ways to do 2D racing games, and I just don't think that they did it well.
Okay.
It's this weird, vaguely isometric-ish point of view, but, I mean, like, you know, really ugly sprites.
Ew. Yeah, that doesn't sound good. Was that based on the same engine as RC Pro-Am?
I'm wanting to say that I read somewhere that it was. I mean, it was definitely in the style of RC Pro-Am. I don't know if the actual engine was used, but I mean, it really, that's basically what it looked like. But, I mean, if you think of RC Pro-Am, that looks basically better than the Game Boy Color Mickey's Racing Adventure.
Oh, gracious. That is some pretty...
And I might just be really rude right now and hungry, but...
Oh, are you hungry? Well, girl, we better hurry up then. Why don't we talk for a brief minute about Magical Tetris Challenge, which is a Disney-themed Tetris game. And that's about all I have to say about
it.
Yeah. That was a Nintendo 64-era game, published by Capcom, may have been available on some other consoles, but the one I played was the N64 release.
I was too busy playing Pokemon Puzzle League.
Which, yeah, Panel de Pon is always a better choice. Why don't you talk a little bit about Epic Mickey 1 and 2? I think you've played these games a little more than I have.
I haven't played Epic Mickey 2. Epic Mickey 1 was not a bad game. It's just it wasn't that great. I thought it was a clever idea. Some of the 3D platforming mechanics just were a little bit janky to me. I thought it could have been executed a lot better. I heard that Epic Mickey 2 was, improved a lot.
Yeah, I like Epic Mickey 2. I think it's pretty all right.
Epic Mickey 2 was apparently more of like a musical.
Yeah, it's also two players. That's nice.
Yeah, because you can play as Oswald, the Lucky Rabbit, who was, of course, a big feature. And, the thing that was kind of neat that they tried to dive into, like, the deep, deep history of Disney and, pre-Mickey and, kind of... Not really spooky, but kind of like a dystopian sort of thing.
Yeah, certainly darker. I mean, Warren Spector Junction Point.
Warren Spector, that's all you have to say,
They very specifically wanted to, that's where the name came from, Epic Mickey. They wanted to make this dark, epic, big game. And I mostly think they succeeded. I like Epic Mickey 2 a fair bit, even. I haven't put in a lot of time with that Power of Illusion.
Yeah, you might remember I talked about that during a What's Up segment. I was not very impressed just because of the amount of downtime that you had to be. I'm going to trace in this thing now.
You're not the only person I've heard say that, but my understanding is that the levels are well-designed and stuff. It just has all of this superfluous stuff that is not really of the gameplay.
It would have done better if it had borrowed more DNA from, like, a Drawn to Life.
Ooh, and I do not... See, I'm not a huge fan of Drawn to Life, so I'm like, ooh, girl.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Okay, so there is an end in sight, so this is good.
You want to talk about two duck games, didn't you?
As a matter of fact, I do. The first one I want to talk about is Quackshot. There is no reason for you not to play Quackshot. The briefest... Easiest way that I could explain Quackshot if I had to right off the top of my head is to say that it is a 2D platforming game with vague Metroidvania elements and also like weapon switching and like a plunger gun that creates temporary steps in like a Mega Man 2 option style. I'm a big fan of Quackshot. I think it's a superb game. It really upsets me that more people don't talk about it. This was one of the Sega games that Sega made in-house, during the Genesis era.
Yeah.
And, there's a lot of, go and get this item and then come back later so that you can open up a different route because you have a new item. And, I'm really into that kind of level design and that kind of world building and...
It's kind of like Donald... As Indiana Jones.
Yeah, no, in fact, I think he's even wearing sort of like a whole like
pretty
fedora
much.
Khaki combo. So yeah, no, it's very
specifically kind of stealing that from Chip from the Rescue Rangers, but...
The other game I wanted to talk about was Maui Mallard in Cold Shadow. This was dev'd by Eurocom, also in the 16-bit generation. I specifically played the Genesis version. You know, it's funny because I always think of myself as a Super Nintendo person. I loved my Super Nintendo contemporaneously. But right now, we're talking about all these Genesis. We're talking about all these Disney games, and I'm like, I played that on Genesis. I played that on Genesis. I played that on Genesis.
Well, with Mickey Mania, the Genesis one had a level that the SNES one did.
Yeah, well, there was, and I was really tuned into that sort of thing. I was reading all the game mags back then, early EGM, Game Pro, Video Games
and
Computer
Entertainment, played,
etc. So I would
Magical
always
Quest
do that.
2 on Genesis as well.
I didn't even realize that was a thing that existed before today.
Yeah.
So that's also super fascinating to me. But Maui Mallard, very straightforward. It's probably not a good game now. But when I was playing it, was sort of a very strange time in my life. I couldn't really buy new games at all, so it'd be like, oh, I'm borrowing this from someone, and this is pretty much the only thing I have to play, because I can't afford anything else. So I played that game for hours and hours and hours, and it's really hard, and it has really tricky combat, but really interesting art and animation that stood out even back then. And I really, really grew on me. It's like Donald Duck as a ninja. Like, that's like the whole game's thrust. Like, what if Donald Duck was a ninja? Let's go with that.
But what do ninjas have to do with Maui?
Because they're in Hawaii or something.
Oh. Okay.
Why don't you talk about Kinect Disneyland Adventures while I get ready for my next big talking point?
For a game that was developed by Frontier, should have been a lot better.
Who is Frontier?
Frontier probably is most notable for Thrillville, for those theme park enthusiasts. They also did work on Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, which, of course, was not the crown jewel in the Roller Coaster Tycoon franchise, but still solid. Because I was like, yeah, I definitely want to give Kinect games a try, I was like, okay, this could be cool. I thought it might be kind of like Adventures in the Magic Kingdom, and it's designed for children. And, like, you have to, like, wave at the screen, like, hi, can you sign my autograph? And then you go and try and do, like, these little Kinect mini-games. So it's kind of like Kinect Sports Adventures, or what was that? Kinect Sports Resort, whatever.
Kinect Adventures?
It's basically that, like, oh, move your body to control the bobsled on the Matterhorn bobsleds.
You know, I really want an Oculus Rift right now, and I just want, like, a Disneyland simulator where I can just simulate being on all the rides.
Well, you know, we're not going to talk about them, but there were virtual Disneyland theme park games that were basically like, I was like, I think one was like Walt Disney World Explorer, which basically was just like, oh, it's a virtual Walt Disney World.
Can you go on rides in them?
I don't know.
Because that's what I would want, but also in virtual reality. And then, oh man, the Space Mountain one can just be black. It makes some sounds, and it's a black screen.
You hear, I'd really like, see, the thing is that when I found out that Frontier was developing this, I was like, oh my gosh, it's going to be like a Thrillville Disneyland. Like, oh, I'm going to put a teacups ride here, but it's going to be Adventureland themed or something. You know, like, I thought that, like, there could have been so much like, that they could have done with this. And it's just, it was a kid's game. And, like, you control a little child, and you go up and, like, oh, Mickey's gonna ask you to get an autograph from Donald.
That sounds really awful. Also, talk into your mic more.
Yeah.
Luckily, you're being loud enough that I think it's still picking you up, but talk into your mic more.
I'm sorry that Seawolf Jason bought that for you one time. Sorry, Seawolf Jason.
Yeah, I'm really sorry that he bought that for me, too. But also, thank you and sorry. Let's talk about Tron.
Maybe you can go across to California Adventure, get a couple of grown-up drinks, and then play Kinect Disneyland Adventure.
Let's talk about Tron. You know, there are, of course, many Tron games over the years. There was an Atari game, there was a series of arcade games. You know, obviously, I think we could probably do a whole Discs of Tron Buoy episode. But I really, the Disney game that I really want to talk about, because it's no longer super relevant, and so I feel like people are already forgetting that it existed.
I know what you're talking about.
Is Tron 2.0. Tron 2.0...
Isn't it called Tron 2.0 Killer App or something?
Well, Killer App is a different thing.
Oh.
Killer App was the Xbox release of this game. And it also had a GBA version. But Tron 2.0 was, for all intents and purposes, meant to be the canonical Tron sequel in the years before Tron Legacy, which I'm a
Tron
huge
Legacy
fan of.
Tron Legacy was so good.
Before Tron Legacy was a thing, you know, this was in, you know, 2003, so the original Tron was already 21 years old, and they were like, all right, let's make a first-person shooter sequel in canon to Tron. This was made by Monolith Productions, who obviously, you know, they're a fairly well-known studio. Fear and Condemned and Alien vs. Predator and, you know, Blood.
Not to be
Shogo.
Confused with Monolith Soft.
No, Monolith Soft is a different thing. But, and they basically made this incredible game. Bruce Boxleitner, whose name I can never pronounce, but I don't care, is totally reprises his roles from the original film. Tons of actors from the original films do voices in this game. Rebecca Romaine did a voice for this game. Sid
the second best thing that she did besides marrying John Stamos.
Sid Mead came in and did new, like, tech designs for the game. And yeah, it's just like this whole Tron sequel that was totally meant to be canon and take the story to the next level. And, you know, there's some really cool things where, like, they tried really hard to be meta, so you're, like, fighting viruses that are named after, like, popular viruses, and they have, like, EXE names in their system.
Real Player EXE, Netscope EXE, and ImageShot 5.0 EXE, according to the wiki article.
Yeah. You know, it was just, it was really cool.
Those are actually resource logs.
Yeah, yeah. So I just was really impressed by this game. I think everyone was at the time. I remember even, like, Penny Arcade and stuff was talking good about it, like, daily. This was a really big deal at the time. And I feel like because it was, it's no longer canon by, post-Tron Legacy, it basically, Tron 2.0 doesn't have a place anymore. That's really, to me, why it's, I really wanted to note it, because it's a good game. Like, I'm not even super big on first-person shooters, but man, you put me in front of Tron 2.0, and I'm here for it. Like, I'm in like Flynn, no pun intended.
That was actually really clever. I didn't mean to do that weird laugh.
Well, thank you. You know, obviously, other Tron games that are and are not worth mentioning would probably be Tron Evolution, which is the game based on Tron Legacy, would probably be most apt. But I thought that game was really super not good.
That's a shame.
Yeah, it was just really basic. It was like a super generic third-person action game. It had like some racing and some RPG stuff, but it never came together. They tried. Credit to them. They tried.
Not enough.
If I'm missing a Tron game, like, I mean, obviously I'm missing a lot of Tron games, but like, if there's a particularly cool Tron game that I did not mention, by all means, please tweet at us, GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And that is, of course, at GameBuoy, and then .org is spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
At GameBuoy.org is spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G.
Brilliant.
Why don't we wrap these next few up?
Yeah, I'm going to skip to the Jungle Book, because I don't want to talk about the Sierra Online Black Cauldron game, because I played it a lot when I was a kid, but the more I'm thinking about it right now, I can't remember a lot about it. It was very similar to, like, King's Quest.
Okay.
It was basically, in fact, you know, now I'm like, okay, I guess I can talk about it. It was basically King's Quest, Black Cauldron. You know, you were going around in very Sierra style. You had to hope to say the right things to the right people to collect the right items to use in the right place. And if you messed up, you'd get a hilarious death sequence.
And, you know, Black Cauldron, super obscure mid-80s animated feature that no one ever talks about. And
yeah.
It was the first one to be rated PG, fun fact.
Oh, I didn't know that. That is actually really rather interesting. Do you have anything to say about the Roger Rabbit game that Rare did?
I don't really remember it that well. Do you have anything to say about it?
I didn't like it, and the final boss battle was broken. The final boss battle was broken, and that's why I don't like it.
Okay. So Jungle Book. You seem to have things to say about Jungle Book by Virgin Interactive.
I don't. It was pretty.
Well, like the other Virgin Interactive ones then, but
yeah.
It
was basic. It was a platformer. It didn't have a lot. I didn't think it had a lot going for it though. Really uninteresting level designs.
Well,
you know,
they have made a game based on a 30-year-old franchise that wasn't even like really that great? Jungle Book's not my favorite Disney film.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's talk about some other Disney adjacent D stuff. Because we only have like three more talking points, and we're really deep into this episode, and we're still like, we still got things to do, girl.
We have more talking points after that.
Yeah, well, we need to get the ball rolling, girl.
DDR Disney Mix.
Awesome. Talked about it on our Rhythm Games special with featuring guest star Rob Roberts a few weeks ago. You know, it's DDR with Disney music. The timing windows are surprisingly tight and the note, but the step charts are fairly basic.
Did it come with a special Disney step pad?
I have only ever played it in the arcade. I've never seen
it. Oh, because I know there was a PS1.
There was a PS1 release. I just don't know if it had a special dance
mat. Probably
not. Guilty Party. I would describe this game, this was a Wii game, I would describe it as Mario Party, Phoenix Wright, and Clue put into a blender.
And the thing that's interesting is, like, it's got nothing to do with any existing Disney IP. It's just
it's this clever
game by Wide Load Games.
Developer of Stubbs the Zombie. Yeah, yeah. And last but certainly not least,
except you didn't like the movie.
For now is Toy Story 3 by Avalanche. This game is particularly noteworthy right this very moment in time, because this is, of course, a, you know, current-gen game based on Toy Story 3, and the actual game is kind of not all that great, but what really got people's attention about this game was the incredible, quote-unquote, toy box mode. This was, of course, a mode where you had basically just all of the objects from the game, and you could create your own little mini-games and create your own little worlds and play
in
them.
That sounds like a game that just came out.
And this was obviously so successful and so widely well-received that they basically made an entire game out of this concept called Disney Infinity.
Out now, for every platform ever.
Yeah, it just came out this past week, in fact, and I have it, and I'll talk about it a little later.
All right.
So I want to sidebar here, and I want to specifically contrast and compare a couple of games that came out around the same time, based on the same license, but which are wildly different games. In the interest of time, we are going to go over these real fast for the most part. There's only one we're going to talk about for any meaningful length of time. Let's get that one out of the way right now. That is, of course, Aladdin SNES versus Genesis, the easy one. Also, hashtag Game Boy Extra. Tweet at us. What do you prefer on the Aladdin
tip?
Yeah, do you prefer the Genesis one or the SNES one? I'm going to get us started. As mentioned earlier, the game design is way more focused on, like, really tight platforming and exploring and momentum. Slagkick, why don't you talk a little bit about the Genesis Aladdin game? Because I know you're
kind of touched on it earlier when you said that it's more combat based. You could throw apples. I think you had like scimitar battles, and I just remember very, very pretty levels, and you know, some very pretty art assets. A really clever genie level. I remember the forced scrolling, is that what you call it, a forced scrolling magic carpet escape, where you basically just had to be like, ooh, get out of the way of this stuff and don't let the lava get you. You know, like I said, both are great. I just remember the Genesis one more fondly because I was spending more time with Genesis when that game came out.
Okay, that makes sense. You know, of course, the games are both really pretty, but I do think the animation has an edge on the Genesis version. And this is, of course, as we discussed, the art assets were designed with assistance by Disney animators. There were some really cute, a lot of cute, really, like, background details, like hidden Mickeys are in that game.
There are hidden Mickeys, yeah.
And I don't believe there are in the Super Nintendo game. The Super Nintendo game is a lot more sort of generic looking. For what Capcom was producing at that time, I would even argue that it's less visually interesting than what Capcom was putting out for even other SNES Disney titles.
I seem to remember, and do you remember in the Genesis one, there was like a Mickey Mouse Mouseketeer hat.
And if you lined up, you'd get an extra life.
But you had to let him go into like his idle mode, so you know, like, we're like Sonic if he was in his idle mode. I guess that's what you call it, like, idle.
That is idle, yeah.
You know, Sonic would tap his foot and be like, hey, hurry up.
Stop talking about Sonic all the time.
But, you know, Aladdin would kind of, like, look to the left, look to the right, and he'd move his head around. And if he lined up with this Mickey Mouse hat, you would get extra lives. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like on a clothesline or something. I very distinctly remember what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And that sort of, those little details and touches in the Genesis version were really incredible. There was a lot of that, really super, just outstanding artwork. You know, some of the little Easter eggs, right, like that, really cool.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, I prefer the platforming and the super good, you know, Capcom doing what Capcom
do. Bag, yeah.
Let's talk about Bonkers now. These are three vastly different games, one on SNES, one on Genesis, one on Game Gear / Master System. Slackick, you know more about Bonkers than I do, so why don't you go over all three of them briefly?
Well, I briefly talked about Bonkers on SNES, which was a Capcom platformer, nothing special. The Genesis one was done by Disney Interactive, and it was pretty lame because you were just throwing stuff. Like, the first level of the game was just like, oh, throw donuts at stuff in a museum. And then do it again.
Why would you throw donuts? Like, I want donuts. I don't want to throw donuts.
We should get some donuts tonight.
Continue.
The Game Gear Master System version was also by Disney Interactive. From what because I never played this one, but from what I found on the internet, apparently it was like only in Brazil. It was called Bonkers Wax Up, and it looked really basic and terrible. But if you are Brazilian or have access to Brazilian games and you love Bonkers Wax Up, please tell us, what was it like? Was it actually a good game? We will not judge you.
I will judge you. No, I won't judge you.
The Aladdin tip, we have one more thing to add, though. Because there was a Game Gear Master System.
Yeah, there was. That was developed by Sims. Sims. And it's actually really cool. It's
not by Sims, like ba-da-da-da, ba-da-da-da, like the Sims, but Sims the company.
Stop. So yeah, it's like a Prince of Persia clone. Like lots of really cool, like
obviously old school Prince of Persia.
Well, yeah, old Prince of Persia, like Prince of Persia, like actual 2D platforming, really tight, small jumps that you have to be real precise with. Again, momentum based platforming. But not in the context of the Super Nintendo Aladdin game, which was really kind of over the top and wild and awesome.
One jump ahead.
This was more of a, you have a small leap, you better position yourself exactly right or you're gonna fall into this pit. Oh, you
all
can't
you
quite
do
make
is
that jump.
Jump!
You can't quite make that jump, but you can grab the ledge and climb up, you know, very Prince of Persia style.
Yeah.
Not combat focused, although you did have apples you could throw to stun people temporarily to get past them. I liked it. I actually, I think that's a very agreeable way to design a game.
Yeah, I think all three of the Aladdin games were pretty solid, which is a rarity for these ones that we're going to be discussing.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because why don't you tell me about the various incarnations of the Little Mermaid?
Well, of course, like we said, the NES one was by Capcom, which I thought was pretty great. The Genesis Game Gear Master System one was done by Blue Sky Software. It was called Ariel the Little Mermaid, and it was just a mess. Like,
But you could play as Triton, right?
You could play as Triton. So
was he shirtless?
Well, obviously, he had those manly merman pecs.
Continue.
One thing that's kind of interesting about The Little Mermaid is that it was a franchise that continued to have games released even as recently as, you know, a couple years ago. The first one after those initial two was to coincide with The Little Mermaid 2... Out of the Sea or whatever, where she has a daughter, and I do not like those direct-to-DVD sequels, but there's Little Mermaid 2 Pinball Frenzy, and the only notable thing about Little Mermaid 2 Pinball Frenzy is that it was done by Left Field Productions, who were the developers of Excitebike 64.
Well, and also that it was a Little Mermaid pinball game. I mean, that's kind of notable in and of itself.
Little Mermaid 2 pinball game.
Oh, it's based on Little Mermaid 2. I didn't even register that when you said it.
And you know, when we joke about, bad Disney games that were released on Game Boy Color way after the Game Boy Color, like, was a thing. That's what we're talking about.
Well, yeah, and you know, this is a good talking point to hit that note. You know, there's a lot of Disney games we have not talked about here today. We've tried to talk about good ones that if you're interested in retro gaming that are probably worth going back and looking
into. Or at least interesting on a historical point.
Or, yeah, goof true. But if, you know, if you're looking for a comprehensive summary of Disney games, we can't give you that. Literally every Disney movie, even still, Brave, I'm sure Frozen will have one. Tangled definitely had a few. Princess and the Frog has them.
And the thing that's notable is that they're available for every platform.
And they're often different games. I mean,
it's like you, a game that's coming out right now at the end of, or like in this point, would be like available for Wii U.
Well, Disney 3D, Infinity this week came out on Wii.
Wii U, 3DS, DS, PS3, Xbox 360.
Vita, and PSP.
It's just so kind of like franchise milking, basically.
And so we don't have time. Like, we're just trying to talk about the good games and the notables, and we're two and a half hours in.
Yeah, so...
Although that'll edit down,
so what's interesting was that we saw a GBA game and a DS game, both from Buena Vista Games, which was the brief rename for Disney Interactive.
Uh-huh.
And GBA was Little Mermaid Magic and Two Kingdoms, which I apparently is Undersea and Out of the Sea, I'm guessing. And then DS game was, I think, just out in 2006, so like not that long ago. Little Mermaid Ariel's Undersea Adventure, which coincidentally shares a name with a theme park attraction in downtown Disney, California Adventure.
Okay.
I have not played either of those, but it's just I thought it was interesting that the Little Mermaid of any franchise was the one that's still getting games. I guess because she's a Disney princess and is still.
So let's talk about Darkwing Duck. You know, we talked about the NES game, High Water
really
Mark,
good.
Incredible. There was also by
High Water Mark and High Water Fowl.
I literally don't know what you're saying by that. There was also by Radiant Software.
A duck is a waterfowl.
By Radiant Software, a TurboGrafx-16/PC engine.
No, actually, the Darkwing Duck one was by Turbo Technologies Incorporated.
Oh, Herder, I misread this note.
Do you
want to
tell us about your experience with the PC Engine version of Darkwing Duck?
It's awful.
It's like, yeah.
It's so bad. It's, you know, you have, like, this super limited gun that you can't really use, so you have to avoid enemies, and, like, the first enemies of the game are, like, really hard to avoid and hit, and super cheap shots everywhere,
and then
the
you're, like, walking up the street,
awful,
and the perspective's just awful.
And there's this really jank perspective. The art is awful. The sound is really just hilariously bad. I really dislike this game.
Yep. The Tailspin,
I didn't like it contemporaneously either.
The Tailspin TurboGrafx-16 game isn't as bad, but it's still pretty laughable.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, but, you know, the thing is, I think I'd probably rather play the PC Engine Tailspin game than the NES one.
Me too, yeah.
So, you know, credit
like,
to that.
I think, weren't you, like, Blue throwing coconuts at monkeys and stuff?
Yeah, which, that's kind of cool. And, you know, the sprites for their time were pretty big and well, you know, animated and stuff. So, that's cool.
Okay.
Neither Tailspin game is... Nothing Tailspin ever in any context is worth writing all about.
Ever.
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 And so that's it for this brief contrast and compare segment. Obviously, if we're missing some that you really think are super interesting, tweet at us. You can email us at mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And otherwise, we have 5 games left to discuss. We are mostly going to touch on them and move on because we have
4 games in the franchise, to be more specific.
I hate you so much. You are not my friend anymore.
Do you effing hate me, Gooby?
What does effing mean?
Fantastic-in.
Let's talk a little bit about Castle of Illusion HD. This is super notable. Obviously, people have wanted these games to make a return for freaking years. And, you know, this segment of the discussion, we're sort of looking at what I call the new wave. This is, you know, sort of new Disney games and, you know, retro remakes. But, yeah, so to my point, people have been looking for this HD remake for a long time. Obviously, there was much a clamor to be made when Power of Illusion, the Epic Mickey 3DS game, was announced. We talked about it heavily here on the show, talked about how much we love Castle and World of Illusion.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I mean, you know, all that can really be said, since I haven't played the game yet, it comes out in, like, 2 weeks, I think. What can really be said is that it looks really, really pretty.
And it looks like they, like, did a lot of interesting stuff with the camera, like, okay, we're gonna kinda, like, turn the camera this way, that, like, in a game with, like, Castle of Illusion just wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get a little 2.5D here, and...
yeah.
give you a slightly different perspective so that this segment becomes more visually interesting.
Which is interesting when you compare it to DuckTales Remastered.
Which is as straightforward as a remake can be, which let's talk about it right now since we both played it. It's literally like they just took DuckTales for NES and gave it really pretty art.
You know, this is what I have to say, is that some people are like, oh, well, why didn't they fix the way that Scrooge's pogo jump works, or Kane pogo jump works, or, you know, why didn't they fix this jump? It's like, no, this is what exactly what I want from an HD remake of a classic Capcom platformer. Like, it is, like, literally, aside from, you know, they added a new intro level where you're in, like, Scrooge, you're in your vault, you're in Scrooge's vault, you are Scrooge, you're in your vault. And, you know, they're like, the Beagle Boys are, like, breaking in, and it kind of sets
fire
up,
and stuff.
There's a little bit more, they flesh out the plot.
Well, yeah, and they added, like, cutscenes that are fully voiced by the original cast of DuckTales.
Which, normally I'm like, LOL, I'm not here for plot, but the little plot pieces that they added in really made each level feel like more like an episode of DuckTales. And they were already based on episodes of DuckTales in the original game. But, I mean, it really felt like I was basically playing through an episode of DuckTales.
Well, and, you know, I tweeted about this to some degree with some other podcasters out there from Koopa Club and Orange Lounge Radio. You know, because for me, mostly, I just skip cinematics. I'm not here for that. I'm here for my 2D platforming. And, you know, Rob Roberts was the one who first to me had said, like, it's just like watching an episode. But once he framed it that way, I stopped skipping them a little bit, and I started to really enjoy, like, I still get really irritated every time you run into Miss Beagley in an episode. It's like, oh, let's stop everything so that she can talk.
But do you know the one thing I wasn't okay with was all the fat shaming that Scrooge did to Mrs. Beagley? But I guess he did that in the show, too, didn't he?
I think he did, but...
Aye, lassie, you kinda need to lay off those cakes and let me have them, hey?
Look at your life, look at your choices. But yeah, no, I, you know, overall, though, I have to say I'm really happy with it. I haven't finished it in time for this episode, unfortunately.
Because you know what I gotta say? Have you gotten to that final level that they added in the game after you beat the boss, the final boss?
No, that's exactly where my save game is at. I just haven't played it yet.
It's crazy. It's like some crazy, like, hardcore platforming, Capcom style. It is rough.
I am literally because
I'm playing on medium difficulty, and it's rough. One thing that I'm without being spoilerish, I'm not going to spoil Remastered, but in the original DuckTales, you went to Transylvania twice, and you had to fight Magicka to spell twice. They changed it around a little bit so that. The final level, you're in Magicka's lair, and then you're, so you kind of.
And I just have to say, I love Magicka Dispel so much because she's so spooky.
She's basically like a, Elvira.
Yeah, she is. She's like Elvira Duck.
Pretty much. But what I thought was really cool and this isn't really spoilerish, they changed it so that you're not really fighting, Elvira. You're not really fighting Magicka again. Like, but she factors into it, so I'm not going to spoil that part for you if you care about the plot, but,
You know, I don't, but we do need to get moving forward.
Yeah, so I just thought that was really clever, and then there's a whole sequence afterwards where you got to escape from her lair, which I haven't finished yet because it's hardcore as fantasy.
Oh, I'm so excited to play it. I might have to do that tonight. Maybe I'll just be like, go eat this stuffed crust pizza while I finish this.
Okay.
Let's see. I also want to talk a little bit about Disney Infinity. I picked this up. I've played it. I'm really impressed. You know, obviously the big gimmick is that you buy all of these action figures that have, bases that once you connect them to the game, they appear in your game world and they come with new levels sometimes. And, the thing that really gets me is that the production values are incredibly high and the tech works as advertised. I was playing and while I'm like, cruising my ship out in the wild ocean in the Pirates of the Caribbean game, which, by the way, is basically just like a family-appropriate version of Assassin's Creed, which is really cool.
Wow.
Complete with ship battles. It's really awesome. Like, I'm changing my ship, what my ship looks like in real time, and there's no load times, there's no stuttering. It's just immediately just like, bam, your ship looks totally different because you selected this new these new pieces for your ship, and you mix and match, and it's just super creative, and there's a lot of options and variety, and I'm really happy with it. I was not expecting the game to be as good of a game as it is.
That's great.
And that's the one that I've put most of my time into, so I can't speak too much about the Cars game, which is a racing game, which so far I have had fun with. I can't really speak about the Monsters game, because I've never played it and probably never will, because I don't like monsters. And
Incredibles.
Incredibles, so far, seems the weakest link of the ones I've played.
The weakest link.
It's all very open and almost like an open worldy style game, and you're supposed to talk to people and get quests and
superpower
and go in the open world. And yeah, I didn't really get a lot out of it so far, but the toy box is freaking ridiculous. It is like a much expanded version of the toy box from Toy Story 3, and the stuff you can make, man. I downloaded a pack on online, and this was user-created content that I downloaded, not something I had to pay for. And it's like someone recreated Disneyland in the toy box, and it's like, oh, hey, it's cool. I'm Jack Sparrow in Disneyland right now. This is awesome.
What?
Yeah, it's pretty rad.
So it's basically what Kinect Disneyland Adventure should have been.
Yeah, I'm really into it. I like it a lot.
Great.
Last but not least in mentions of the upcoming wave of Disney games, we would be remiss not to discuss Fantasia. This is, of course, Harmonix's attempt at creating the new Fantasia living music project. I don't know how else to describe Fantasia.
Yeah.
So far, it looks really, really good. We talked about it a fair bit in our Rhythm Games episode, so I don't want to tarry too long. But, yeah, it looks like good stuff. I can't wait to play it. Kind of giggle at the idea of them licensing popular music, because, like, we're going to have to pop our
Plutos?
Pop our Plutos to Nicki Minaj or something. It'll have to be like a Kidz Bop remix of Starships. But, yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. And I think that about does it.
Yep.
Except I'm, you know, obviously you must have noticed there's a giant elephant in the room we have not discussed at all, and that's Kingdom Hearts. Kingdom Hearts, obviously, is a game made by Square Enix. Rather by coincidence, in fact, basically, someone on an elevator in Japan who worked at Square Enix was on an elevator with someone who worked at Disney and was like, we should do a crossover. And that's literally how Kingdom Hearts happened.
Wow.
You know, and it's like a Final Fantasy Disney crossover. We're going to talk about this in a future episode. I say future episode, but I mean in a week or two, we're going to do a focus on Kingdom Hearts for a spoiler-friendly, so we will not be doing spoilers during this discussion, for people who are just getting into the series with 1.5 HD Remix, which comes out in the second week of September.
Yep.
So please look forward to it. With that, let's get the rest of this show on the road and try to wrap it up, because we're pretty deep. Speaking
we're
of
rolling
deep,
in the deep.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
So why don't you tell me, in fact, what rumors have it?
Namco Bandai has filed more Tails trademarks.
Oh?
Like Tails Sky Patrol. No, I'm totally kidding.
No!
Tails of Link, Tails of Jin, and Tails of Ancis.
Oh, that's interesting, because none of those are, like, existing characters in the Tails of series. Although,
yeah.
Link, that's interesting. How funny would it be if they made a Tails game that was a Nintendo crossover?
I'd be here for that.
Yeah, well, I have to say my fear is that these are going to be, like, iOS mobile Tails spinoffs. Because usually you have, like, big epic games like Tails of Vesperia.
That's true.
Although,
they sound like they're more, like, single character-based. And that's kind of what Silicon Era is noticing, too. But, we'll see, because Tales of Xillia is kind of notable these days, right? Isn't it?
Yeah. And, that's obviously, if you didn't know that that was a proper Tales game, you'd probably think it was some character-focused spinoff. So, yeah, that's a really good point. And that's funny. All of our rumors this week really come from trademarks. Because, that also popped up was a what appears to be a Pokemon-adjacent trademark. In fact, I say appears to be, but it was filed by the Pokemon Company for something called Pokken Fighters.
Or Pokken Tournament.
Yes.
They're actually both trademarks were registered.
And, you know, rather interestingly, the Pokemon Company teased a brief image during the Pokemon game show of what appeared to be a 3D fighting game with a Lucario and a Blaziken fighting.
Here for that.
Obviously, internet scuttlebutt is sort of on the idea that maybe we're going to get a Pokemon fighting game.
Interesting.
And in other rather very interesting Pokemon
trademark news.
Yes, can you take this?
It's half follow-up because there is a trademark for Poke Treta Battle, which, and we talked about Pokemon Treta Lab last time, which was developed by Marvelous AQL. So we're thinking that maybe that Pokemon Treta might be localized.
Now that would be great. I'd really enjoy that. I would love to get into the Pokemon Treta.
I wonder why all this Poke Treta instead of Pokemon.
I don't know. That's really interesting to me too, but I mean, with Pokken Fighters, some people were saying because like Ken like kanji for like fist in the same way like
Tekken.
Oh,
that's clever.
But I don't know with regard to the Treta stuff.
Interesting.
Yeah, well let's I think that's it for our rumors. I think it's time to discuss
I said, hey, what's going on?
So I'm going to talk real quick about four games. I'm going to try to keep myself on a time limit. The first game I played this week was an amazing 3DS eShop indie title called SteamWorld Dig. The best way I could think to describe this would be like Metroidvania meets Terraria, by way of Minecraft. It's a 2D platformer with strong Metroidvania elements. You know, you unlock new jumps and new weapons and new tools and stuff. And you have to sort of dig down into a mine in order to find this stuff. And the idea is you're rebuilding a town. There's some kind of story or something. I don't really know.
Huh.
But it's really cool. It was like $6 or something, and if you're into these kinds of exploration and character grow and new abilities, like if you're into those kinds of mechanics, in fact, you know, most people that I have seen review this game compare it to Super Metroid. That's where the comparison probably really comes in for most people, I think. Right down to even having a dash that works in the same style as Super Metroid's run and jump and all that.
Why can't Metroid crawl?
Why can't
Tori read?
I also spent some time with the early access period of Final Fantasy XIV. I am playing on the Midgar Sormer server along with the folks from Orange Lounge Radio / VOG Network. And that's all I'm going to say about that for right now. I really enjoy the game. I think it's quite tremendous. And I suspect after the game properly releases,
which was
Tuesday.
Yeah.
That comes out Tuesday, but early access started today.
Yeah.
Once I've gotten into it, I'll talk about it more, but we're already short for time, so I won't go into it. Something I do have to go into is Gone Home. There's no one listening to Game Buoy that would not benefit from playing Gone Home. It is a really incredible art game. It really sort of discusses both directly and indirectly sort of the effects of, you know, like sort of being a queer person and sort of a lot of very serious issues. So I highly, highly recommend this game. It's available on Steam. I've heard some people complain that it's too expensive for how many hours you play it, but I just can't.
Let's be real. How many hours are you spending in a game you're playing? Paying $50, $60 for it these days.
Yeah. I mean, it's only a couple hour experience, but it's a really impacting experience. It gave me a lot of feelings. I certainly shed a few tears, and I think everyone would really benefit from looking into this game.
Wow,
at least reading up on it, if nothing else. Last but not least, one of our listeners,
Ricardo from the Still Alive Studios.
We talked a little bit about him during our Gamer X episode. We talked about meeting him and networking and how cool
handsome
he
was.
I'm not going to call him handsome, although he is, but I'm not trying to make no one weird. But he's working on a game currently called Son of Nor. This game is particularly notable as having been successfully kickstarted last year, or maybe earlier this year, in some point in the past. I was very fortunate enough to have the opportunity to play the alpha of this game, just to sort of see what he's working on and how it's shaping up. And I'm very interested in playing more of this. I'm very interested
in
seeing more
physics-based environmental physics and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I really dig environmental deformation and that sort of thing. So I'm super excited for it. And the real thing I want to do here is reach out to all of you out there in Internet Radio Land. If you're listening to this and you have Steam, please, 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 please load up Steam. Look up Son of Nor on Greenlight and vote for it.
Yes,
it is a
do.
Good game. It's really neat. And, you know, it's by one of our listeners. And I support it wholeheartedly. And I hope any of you out there who are interested in this game will take a moment and vote for it so that it can be released on Steam. And likewise, I just want to say, if any of our other listeners are also working on games, please, by all means, let me play it. And if it's good, I will tell people about it. And if it's not, I will simply tell you, oh, it wasn't for me. I'm not going to badmouth you on my show. That would be awful. What about you, Slykick? What did you play?
Well, I kind of had jumped in with Son of Nor Alpha. I had also had the opportunity to play, and we pretty much covered it there. DuckTales Remastered is the big one I've been playing, which I already kind of covered. The one other notable thing that I had the opportunity to play was Viv Ribbon for the first time.
Oh, yeah, that was just last night.
And that's just a magical little game, and we weren't even popping CDs into it or anything. Just the on-disc soundtrack is just amazing.
Pumping by the river, floating by my side.
And, I mean, really, like, you know, as we talked about, I don't know how much we got into this with our rhythm gaming episode, but Japanese rhythm games are very demanding in terms of timing. And, you know, that's true for even things such as Harmonite is very demanding in terms of timing.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, I didn't really think about it, but in many ways, Viv Ribbon really is a rhythm platformer.
Oh, it absolutely is.
I never really thought about it in that context.
You know, and it's funny you say that about Japanese rhythm games. I keep a CRT TV on hand. Specifically so that I can play these Japanese rhythm games still, Viv Ribbon in particular, and as you noticed, we set it up last night and we could play it. The same cannot be said, unfortunately, for Jammer Lammy on a PS3 connected to an HDTV.
Yep.
Womp, womp. Moving on, I think that about does it for What's Up. I think we are very, very nearly done for the day.
Yep, so let's get on to the
Smash or Trash! Real quick for you, we sort of have a weird setup this week. We have a Smash, just an absolutely superb article by Jeremy Parrish over on usgamer.net. This is the new Dark Age of Dragon Quest, where Parrish basically goes into the logistics and likelihoods about whether or not we are going to see more Dragon Quest content here in the U.S., you know, I ultimately believe that we will. I personally think we're going to end up seeing, after Bravely Default, I think we'll see the Dragon Quest VII 3DS remake jump over the pond and come over here. But it's just a really insightful look. He does a really good job of... Parrish is back. He does a great job of supporting his statements, and even the ones that I don't agree with, it's really well written and worth reading. We will link you to that, of course, on GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org.
And second, I want to do something a little different from normal, and I want to point out the Fuck No Video Games Tumblr. Of course, pardon my language, but that is literally the name of it. And this is, of course, a site that is run that mainly just looks at problematic issues in games. And normally I wouldn't, point this out, except there was sort of a controversy this week in that Zero Punctuation by The Escapist Had some really, really unpleasant, transphobic, language and visuals in their most recent episode. And, you know, to some degree, I get that, zero punctuation is gonna be, kind of problematic. They're gonna say some things that are not politically correct, and they're not gonna care about who they hurt. And I don't think that's okay, but I think it's a thing they do, and, you know, it is what it is. But for me, the real problem is that there's a step too far, and I think they've crossed it.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of negativity directed towards trans folk and harming them and not taking them seriously and taking sexual advantage of them as a joke. And honestly, just none of this is funny. It is all inappropriate. It is all hurtful. And the games journalism space and criticism space does not need this kind of content in it. And the reason I'm posting a link to a Tumblr, which is not something we normally do, and the reason we're referring to it here is because no one is talking about this.
It's not okay.
You know, this happened 3 days ago, and it still hasn't been anywhere. I haven't seen it on any of the blogs. I haven't seen it anywhere but Twitter and Tumblr, and...
Well, you know, I understand. Twitter is basically the...
I understand that the meme is, LOL, social justice, you sound like a Tumblr user. But, no, I'm sorry, inclusiveness is always agreeable. There's no context in which inclusiveness is a bad thing. And even when it's no longer, like, the cool hip thing to be into, we are still going to be blowing this horn. So, by all means, please, 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 I have tweeted and wrote an email to... the escape is just to be like, I'm done with y'all. Like, this is not acceptable. And if that's how you feel, I suggest you do the same. Obviously, if you find this kind of humor appropriate, you know, I guess your tastes and your feelings are your tastes and your feelings, but I will never. I don't think this is right. I don't think it's good. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is something that people need to speak up against.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that Twitter is basically the best source for, like, actual news these days, which is sad.
I agree. But, you know, I'm on Twitter all day, every day. Like, I basically live on Twitter now.
Yeah. And when we live on Twitter, we like to shout out to our social links.
Well done. Get to it. Yeah, this week, we're talking Disney games, and our question of the week said as much. Further, we wanted to know, do people have a favorite? And further from that, how about one not made by Capcom?
So we got some answers, starting off with the Koopa Club kids. Jeremy from Koopa Club commented over on Facebook, saying, I remember Disney's Aladdin for the Genesis being particularly faboo, so that gets my vote. But let's be real, the best Disney games were made by Capcom. Sorry about it. Don't gotta be sorry about it, because I totally agree.
You know, I'm not surprised that that's the answer he gave, because he... is probably the only person I know who likes Mega Man as much as I do.
Right.
And most of these good Disney games that were made by Capcom were just Mega Man games.
We had another thoughtful response from Renee from Koopa Club, who also commented over on Facebook, saying, asking me to pick a favorite Disney game is asking, like... sorry, is this it's another well-written response. Asking me to pick a favorite Disney game is like asking me to choose my favorite child. I didn't know you had children. There were so many that were released back in the day.
They're kittens.
I thought they were puppies. But there are so many that were released back in the day. But then there are some great ones that have been released within the past decades. I will have to say that DuckTales on the NES is my favorite Disney game. Not a perfect game, but it still has its charm. And I had... to add, because it is hilarious, that it's trailed closely by Adventures in the Magic Kingdom. Yeah, I said it. One that was not made by Disney, or I think he means Capcom here. Well, my pick should be fairly obvious, but it's Kingdom Hearts. And seeing those familiar Disney characters in an RPG setting for the first time had me hooked immediately. Ian from the Koopa Club podcast commented over on Facebook. Kingdom Hearts, Toy Story SNES, and Lion King.
Now, I have actually never played Toy Story SNES.
I always forget that Toy Story came out right when the SNES was towards the end of its lifespan, yeah.
Have you played that game?
No, I have not.
Well, I think on Ian's recommendation, I'm going to have to go order a cart of it right now and play it once it comes in.
Andy W. commented over on Facebook, I've got a second Ian's Kingdom Hearts and Jeremy's Aladdin, but my favorite will always be The Little Mermaid for the NES. Andy, if you can remember any of the other, like, bubble power-ups, please tweet at us, comment on Facebook, because I couldn't remember. Although I could probably find out by going and digging out my cartridge, but still.
You know, I haven't played Little Mermaid as much as you guys clearly have. Maybe I need to go back to that, because I don't remember it being that special.
ActDef tweeted to us that Kingdom Hearts is pretty much the obvious non-Capcom choice. And we got an answer from MailBuoy. Well, not from MailBuoy, but GameBuoy superfan Dan D sent an email to MailBuoy.
Yay.
Saying, yo-ho, me mateys. I played a few Disney games in the past 20 or so years. Well, especially if you're now married to Crystal D and you've been with her for a while. Unless I'm wearing rose-tinted glasses, I'm pretty sure each one was great and made by Capcom. I'll be interested to hear if there are any good Disney games that weren't made by Capcom. And hopefully we've got that.
Hopefully.
Crystal says Kingdom Hearts, but gasp, I didn't play that. So, the next episode will be great for you. Anyway, I'm sorry I'm commenting so much, but... Anyway, I think Aladdin for the SNES was probably my favorite, although there's a special place in my heart for Adventures in the Magic Kingdom.
Everyone likes this stupid game!
That game wasn't good, but it was great being able to go into the attractions and play different types of games. For young me with no income, stretching out the playability was important. Anyway, more recently, Crystal D and I have been enjoying Disney's Infinity, and he referred to his own wife as Crystal D. That's amazing.
Woot woot!
It's surprisingly good, and we've only really played around the sandbox. So that's it. See you, Space Mickey. Candy, you're the best.
You are the best. You are an incredible human being. Thank you so much.
This isn't an answer to the topic of the week, but it is a topical tweet. It's a topical Twitter thread.
Are you just reading tweets that people we know tweeted that aren't even about GameBuoy?
It's related. It's very related. Sky over on Twitter, best known as Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, Horde House and the Voice of Geeks Network, said,
"Hey, nobody care about Horde House."
Was some of this dialogue in DuckTales recorded in an iPhone? The quality is not great. I didn't think it was that bad.
Well, no, especially Magicka Dispel sounds awful. Like, I get that she's like 96 now or something, but it sounds like she was recording through a tinfoil hat.
It still sounds better than some of the episodes of Game Boy, which is what Fix Your Face, a.k.a. Jeremy from Koopa Club, tweeted. Said, OMG, maybe they heard our panel and heard Spike Point and Slagkick talking about GameBuoy.org on an iPhone and liked it.
Yeah, you missed an operative word there, but basically...
Recording GameBuoy.org.
Yes.
On an iPhone. It's late.
It's not. It's 4:30 in the afternoon.
No, but I mean, we've been recording for almost 3 hours.
More than 3 hours.
We've passed the 3 hour mark.
Yeah, when I edit it down, we won't be past 3 hours.
We'll
but
see
right
about
now.
That. So let's keep it moving. So super, I thought it was super funny and topical because we're talking about DuckTales, even though it wasn't directly an answer to the question of the week. We had some feedback from episode 34, which was our Gamer X Year 1 episode. Renee from Koopa Club commented on Facebook saying Sassy Spike is sassy. VG Realness tweeted saying, quoting us, saying the plural of news is newses. We said that again this episode. Raffle.
Yeah, I have decided the plural of news is newses.
Newses. Gaming Hipster said, thanks for the shout out, guys. You've got a new listener. But only the third cutest? Shoot, I'd better step up. That was you who said that. Gaming Hipster, I think you're hella cute. Oops, I lost the challenge.
I already lost it. I dropped like an F-bomb.
No, but now I lost the challenge.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
Fix Your Face, aka Jeremy from Koopa Club, tweeted, new VG Realness.
Also, Gaming Hipster, you were really cute, so
really
cute. Be happy.
Fix Your Face, aka Jeremy from Koopa Club, said, tweeted, new VG Realness in GameBuoy.org, so it's basically my Christmas in July. Oh, wait, it's August. Oh, crud. Kiki Tosario on Twitter, also known as Ricardo from Soul Live Studios, Son of Nor, said, thanks for the shout out, guys, and, then
I'm about to put you on a timer.
Then Bubonic Clegg on Twitter said, what was their web address again? And Ricardo replied, GameBuoy.org. And Bubonic Clegg said, thanks. You know, the repetition is the key to learning.
That is literally the reason we do
GameBuoy.org.
That. GameBuoy.org.
Nashoba78 on Twitter said, heard an awesome shout-out for Kiki Tosario and Son of Nor on the latest GameBuoy.org. You should give it a listen. And also said, very touching GameBuoy.org from Spike Point and Slagkick. Plenty of love for Kiki Tosario and a certain pink mohawk on Twitter user at @actuallyanthony. We have a quick few general feedbacks. Chito16 tweeted, silly frags, Game Bar, GameBuoy.org, Koopa Club, VG Realness. You all led me to each other and I have nothing but love.
Aww.
Space Pirate Ben tweeted us a Reddit link, and it is a picture of a local Asian supermarket selling Mega Man meats. Mega Man meats, not Mega Man meats. Mega Man meats.
Wow.
We're going to link you to this Reddit thread because it is amazing.
We'll link you over on GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org. Space Pirate Ben also retweeted Zach Finfrock, who said, "Would love to see this fixed. It's pretty sad, really." It's a Tumblr link to a picture of an autocorrect on like a PS3 where the unpleasant F word about homosexual men is like not even just like a starting to type that word. It's if you type the letter F, it's like one of the first ones in there.
That it wants to say, oh, are you trying to drop the bad F-bomb?
Yeah, so thank you to Space Pirate Ben for bringing that to our attention. It wasn't really...
Yeah. I don't know if this is, like, if there's going to be, like, a petition about this or a emailing campaign to Sony, but, like, I think it's definitely super inappropriate for this word to be popping up in the autocomplete field.
I agree. And our final tweet for the week is from Think Nathan over on Twitter, who says, "I like long podcasts. If you have good topics and keep the momentum going, the overall time shouldn't matter. Thank you so much, and I hope you still feel that way after this episode."
Yeah, right? Sorry about it, but also thank you so much.
And thank you so much for those of you who give us your feedback, your iTunes subscriptions, your ratings and reviews, your Facebook likes, your Twitter tweets, your Tumblr tumbles, your Google Plus ones, your emails over to MailBuoy.
Can they be email emails?
Just
based on your sentence structure?
Yeah, I guess so, but I said over to MailBuoy. And, you know, you can find all of our social links over at GameBuoy.org.
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 We have some shout-outs to do really quick. We're almost done here. Thank you so much for tuning in. And please check out these people's Spike. Captain Spike.
Alright, so obviously the first people I'm going to shout out are the same first people I shout out every week.
Keep it going, keep it going.
You don't get to do that to me. Now that we've proven that,
like what we do?
If you like what we do and you want a little bit more content in that style, I highly recommend you check out Koopa Club. They are great. I love what they do.
Basically our video game podcast soul sisters.
They are. They are our brothers from another mother.
Sisters from another mister.
I've never heard that one. I like that.
You haven't?
No, no.
I think Phil used that hashtag, or maybe from VG Realness did.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, you know, VG Realness, where they serve up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. They're a superb little LGBT-focused gaming show. I'm a huge fan of them. I think that they're superb. And, you know, they're only a handful of episodes in. I know I say this every week, but their production is top-notch. Just a superb show. I want to throw out an extra special shout-out that is not on my actual show notes to Nishoba Talks With You About Video Games.
Oh.
The first episode of this went up. It's currently on YouTube. It's about 2 hours long, so, wow. You know, he's in good company with us. And the first episode is titled 48 Hours or The One with Igor. He basically talks about his experiences about... attending Gamer X and being inspired by our panel to have, finally kicked off,
oh my
off
gosh.
The ground, you know, his long imagined dream of doing a podcast.
Wow.
I just feel immense pride.
I'm honored.
I've listened to the show. I think it's great. He does a lot of singing. And since we do that in our show, I'm like, this is awesome.
What?
He actually does more singing than us because he's a legit singer. Like he actually has like a really respectable voice. Like I'm kind of jealous. Anyway, back to my normal...
Speaking of voices...
yeah. Well, I also want to shout out to Geek Charisma, a podcast that is everything geek with discussions on movies, DVDs, video games, conventions, and comics. We met these folks at Gamer X. They were really cool, and, you know, they put on a pretty good show, so check them out. And last, but most certainly not least, we have Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I blatantly steal... all of my radio mannerisms. I would not have a radio persona if not for Rob Roberts, so thank you.
I'd like to shout out to Game Bar, the podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They are the gay prairie home companion for video games.
I appreciate you being really fast, but you need to be slow enough that people who are listening can hear you
I saw you pulling out your phone and getting Mr. Timer up.
I wasn't.
So, we would love you to go check out Game Bar, the podcast.
I wanna take it to a game bar!
The podcast that fills your brain space with hours of gay video game commentary. They are basically the gay video game Prairie Home Companion. Nerdgasm Network just celebrated 2 years of wild, raunchy, nasty, and very R-rated, not family-friendly, not squeaky Disney clean, video game Shock Shock Radio. Girls Gone Wow, you can get the world's most popular MMO, Female Perspective. I kind of mixed that one up, but love Syl and her gals. Video Game Outsiders is the podcast about video gaming from the average player's perspective. And why did you move Horde House to the last of my shoutouts on our show notes? Was that intentional?
Yes.
Or why are you trying to start some, like, Fabulous Flames-esque rivalry here? Horde House is the place for all things online gaming, but never too seriously. And we're still pouring out a
bottle of juicy juice.
An overpriced drink from Disneyland.
Nah, dude, bottle of juicy juice.
Well, I was saying like an overpriced drink, like $4 soda for Zelda Reorchestrated.
You can't even talk. That's it. We're done.
Who did our wonderful theme music? Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got something out of this very magical Disney episode.
Thank you so much. By all means, please reach out to us if you have any questions, concerns, or would like to talk more about any of these games. I would be totally willing to do a follow-up if there's demand for it. Maybe do a Game Buoy Micro about Disney games we had never played. I don't know. I don't really think that's a good idea, but I'd do it for our listeners. In the meantime, we will see you next time when we talk about Kingdom Hearts. Until then, keep gaming, keep thinking, and itsuka issho ni kagayaite.
I told you to start using ones I understood. I can't understand Japanese, and I can't speak it either.
Did your stomach just rumble?
Yes.
Okay, we need to get some food.
Yeah. Well, isn't that a bag of hot dicks?
Hot dicks. Hot dicks. Hot dicks.
Wark!
Darkwing Duck!
Those manly merman pecs.
Oi, ladies.
Piss out my ass! Oh!
I'm gonna save that as pissoutmyass.wave.
Shut up.